accused of terrorism, of vandalism, of causing violence, because that's been the discourse of the right for decades here in Colombia. Any political, social opposition against the economic, political model of intransigence, of authoritarianism, of militarism, has been silenced in that fashion.
We have to leave it there, but we will continue to talk to you in Colombia. Mario Murillo, award-winning journalist and professor at Hofstra University. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. And for this week, it means it's time for a 3-hour edition of Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm monitoring the levels for our remote.
How are the levels tonight? Good levels?
Well, if no one talks,
you looked,
no...
but I wasn't saying anything, so I should keep talking.
They're perfect, like right. Everything else here at WUSB Stony Brook.
Well, we're not actually at WUSB Stony Brook. We're broadcasting to WUSB Stony Brook from an undisclosed location, which, by the way, changes every week. I don't know if that's necessary anymore, but that's what we've been doing for the last, I guess since last March, a year ago March.
It's amazing what is possible with modern technology
and viruses, yeah,
and
all sorts of things.
But here we are, and it's ebbed back into a bit of a hot day, so I hope everyone's cooling out. I hope the vacation, the holiday, was full of processed foods and revelry.
Yeah, you know, it is hot again. I don't know why. Always in the middle of the week it gets hot. It's like it's known that we're in a place where ventilation is an issue. So we have to, in 3 hours of this, we have to get through it. But we will. You know, a three-hour radio slot is pretty standard. It's, of course, that's usually for a music slot. But 3 hours is unusual for us, but standard in radio. So it's nothing to panic about, either on the listener end or on our end. We have a lot of things to discuss. A lot of things to try out. We might be doing some other things. Finn isn't here this evening. He's usually here from 7 to 9, so he asked us to step in for him. We're gonna do our best.
If you want more information about our radio station, you can go to WUSB.FM, and there's a listing of Finn's show, archived shows of his. Maybe from last week.
Yeah, if you want to listen to that instead of us, I guess you could do that.
Yeah, but he's going to be back, as will all the other eclectic programs here at Stony Brook's most dangerous station.
You forgot the call letters, didn't you?
No, I wasn't going to go for that. Okay. But you know how it is in the dog days of summer when you have a tropical formation heading towards the country and...
We have a tropical storm coming, so that might be interesting.
Yep.
Maybe later in the week.
And they erupted that building. I didn't want to get dark.
Erupted that building?
They demolished.
Demolished, yeah. I don't think erupted is the right word.
Other parts of it... Well, it was sort of an eruption. I caught a glimpse of that on a recording, and it was pretty solemn to have that right in the middle of 4th of July.
It was kind of weird because you see this building being, I guess, imploded, and in the distance you see fireworks. What a crazy country! But that's how it goes, I guess. And of course, 4th of July was happening here, and people were blowing up things left and right. Whatever.
I think people's pets are very happy that's over.
Yeah, and kind of upset that it happened in the first place. But I can't say I blame them. Hey, indulge me for a second. I've got some things I'd like to get off my chest.
Oh, yeah? What are you thinking about?
All right. Well, let me just say what I feel here, and let the cards fall where they may. Lee Zeldin is a white supremacist. Yeah. The evidence against New York's first congressional district representative just keeps piling up. And labeling somebody as a white supremacist isn't something that I do lightly, believe me. But ignoring the facts to avoid disturbing people, that's a whole lot worse. You know, it's one week ago today, June 29th, a vote came up in Congress, a vote that was incredibly bipartisan for this day and age. The issue was a simple one. Replacing Confederate statues in the United States Capitol. The Capitol! Most people had no idea we were actually honoring those who fought against the United States in one of our most revered buildings. which is why the House overwhelmingly approved this by a vote of 285 to 120, with 67 Republicans voting in favor of replacing these statues with those of people more worthy of being honored. Lee Zeldin was the only congressman within hundreds of miles to vote for Confederate statues in the Capitol. Look, let's put this in perspective. Connecticut has 5 representatives, all voted yes for removal. Massachusetts, 9 representatives, all voted for removal. Rhode Island, 2 representatives, all voted for removal. New Hampshire, another 2 representatives, all voted for removal. Vermont has 1 representative, which, you guessed it, voted for removal. Maine, 2 representatives, all voted for removal. New Jersey has 12 representatives, 2 of whom are Republicans. They all voted for removal. In other words, nobody in any of those 7 nearby states thought it was a good idea to vote to preserve these symbols of white supremacy in the nation's Capitol building. Representative Lee Zeldin did. Among the arguments people like Lee Zeldin use for keeping racist statues standing is that they're part of our history. Well, so is Charles Manson, but we don't mark that ugly chapter with statues, and certainly not in our nation's Capitol building. Yet these bad chapters of our history should not be forgotten, which is why our nation's history of slavery, genocide, and oppression need to be studied in our school's history classes. But this, of course, is not something a white supremacist would want, which is why Lee Zeldin opposes teaching about the racism that has been a part of our nation for centuries. He condemns teaching this as a, quote, lurch to the left in our education system. Rather than confront the issue head-on, Lee Zeldin prefers to conjure up some left-wing conspiracy to indoctrinate all of our children and lead them into communism. This is what white supremacists do. When faced with the prospect of owning up to the injustices of the past and present, they choose instead to make up a brand new threat as a distraction. Anything to avoid talking about this. You know, in Germany, children are taught quite early on about the horrors their nation was responsible for. And they come out of it more knowledgeable, more aware of injustice, and more dedicated to making their country a better place. And not surprisingly, there are those on the far right in Germany who are trying to put an end to this. And their logic of how such teaching turns kids against their country sounds awfully familiar. But getting back to the vote, some of the states where Lee Zeldin's vote was echoed are places like Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Kentucky, Arizona, South Carolina, Florida, Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana. You get the picture. States of the Deep South and some of their neighbors. Lee Zeldin's beliefs of white supremacy are much closer to the norm in the Deep South than they are in the Northeast. And yet, here we are with an actual white supremacist representing the people of Suffolk County in the halls of Congress. How on earth does such a thing happen? Well, it's simple, really. You ever hear the phrase, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing? Well, in the case of Suffolk County, a lot of good people didn't do enough. 4 times now we have elected Lee Zeldin as our representative and have chosen to ignore or even embrace his overt racism. The recent vote on Confederate statues is only the most recent. We could fill hours discussing his racist, anti-democracy, and pro-Trump at all cost policies. For instance, we could look at how Lee Zeldin reacted after the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police. Did he ignore that death and those of countless other innocent people of color at the hands of the police? No, he didn't. Lee Zeldin acted. He quickly drew up a Bill of Rights for the police. You see, to a white supremacist like Lee Zeldin, there is nothing more threatening than a black person who knows their rights and is willing to stand up and fight for them. That is why Lee Zeldin demanded that cops be able to use force whenever they felt it was necessary. That is why Lee Zeldin demanded that more equipment be given to police to allow them to more easily keep these people down. Lee Zeldin even demanded that any cop being accused of abuse not be subjected to offensive language or be threatened with punishment. In fairness, Lee Zeldin condemned the cop who murdered George Floyd. Everyone did. But there were five of them who were complicit. Five. It wasn't a one bad apple thing like Lee Zeldin would have you believe. It was a much bigger problem, one he regularly ignores. For instance, when Trump came to Suffolk County and joked with police about how it was okay for them to rough up suspects, Lee Zeldin laughed along with the rest. And afterwards, he released a statement backing up Trump completely. In Lee Zeldin's eyes, violence against suspects at the hands of the police is perfectly okay unless you get caught being particularly brutal. Then Lee Zeldin may condemn it in a statement released days later if it's an election year. Not to worry, though. His police Bill of Rights will go a long way towards protecting any cop from facing justice. To people like Lee Zeldin, an organization like Black Lives Matter will always be far more of a threat than bad cops who terrorize their communities. Why? Did you miss the part about the white supremacy? How else does a statement that is so obvious, so non-controversial as Black Lives Matter get interpreted as a threat against white people? Only those in a position of incredible privilege who feel they may lose that if the playing field is evened would become as defensive as Lee Zeldin repeatedly has. Now, of course, what I'm saying here is my opinion. It's based on many facts. And one of those facts is that Lee Zeldin has no interest in what his constituents think. Sure, write him a letter. Call him on the phone. We'll tell you how in a bit. But don't count on being able to see him at a town hall like other representatives where members of the public can ask questions. He has steadfastly refused to engage in this basic part of a democracy. The only interaction he permits are telephone town halls, where the questions are pre-screened and tightly controlled. Does that sound anything like democracy? Ah, yes, democracy. Another enemy of Lee Zeldin, and of white supremacists everywhere. Hearing what the people actually have to say is the last thing a racist wants. Because in the end, most people want to do what's right. Sure, they can be misled and they can make bad decisions, keeping them in the dark, not allowing questions, instilling fear and hostility against the other. This is how someone like Lee Zeldin stays in power in a state like New York. But that doesn't mean democracy is powerless. Far from it. Democracy can fix all of this, which is why Lee Zeldin is so afraid of it. That's why on January 6th, while the same Capitol building that he just last week voted to be a place to honor the Confederacy, while that same building was still reeling from the violent attack by insurrectionists trying to overturn the results of the 2020 election, Lee Zeldin joined them. Lee Zeldin added his voice to those attempting to paint the presidential election as stolen from Donald Trump. This despite there being no evidence then and no evidence now of any measurable amount of voter fraud. As with everyone else participating in this lie, Lee Zeldin was simply afraid of what democracy was saying. And that is how it is with white supremacists. They can never adjust their way of thinking to a changing world. Therefore, everything that's different becomes a threat. Every bit of progress must be resisted. Which is why Lee Zeldin is terrified of having Confederate statues come down. This is why he's terrified of a bipartisan investigation into the events of January 6th and cast the only no vote against it in the entire Long Island congressional delegation. Any one of these acts of Lee Zeldin might be able to be explained away as a miscalculation or gaffe. But there are so many more than just one. We can keep adding on to the pile all night. We've got 3 hours. We can do it. Lee Zeldin met with extremist vigilante group, the Oath Keepers. Lee Zeldin spoke with a group that has publicly stated the Sandy Hook massacre was a hoax. He speaks with hate groups and conspiracy theorists far more than his own constituents, because Lee Zeldin isn't afraid of hate and conspiracy. He's afraid of us. Well, we said we'd let you know how to reach him, or at least how to attempt to reach him, as he's kept pretty isolated from the people of Suffolk County. So get your pens ready. If you're in the D.C. area, his office is at 2441 Rayburn House Office Building in Washington, D.C. If you're writing a letter, the zip code is 20515. If you want to call him up, area code 202-225-3826. If you're local, hop on down to Patchogue, 31 Oak Street, suite number 20. Patchogue zip code is 11772. Phone number 631-289-1097. If you feel like sending a fax, hey, you don't even have to pay for the phone call. It's toll-free, 866-404-6613. Good luck with that. Or if you're in Riverhead, 30 West Main Street, number 201. Riverhead zip code is 11901. Phone number is 631-209-4235. Let us know what kind of success you have communicating with our representative, Lee Zeldin. Yes, Lee Zeldin is a white supremacist, and he represents Suffolk County to the House of Representatives. Let's not be surprised by this. Decades ago, there were Nazi rallies in this county. Our history of racism, segregation, and violence against people of color, immigrants, and Native Americans are as bad as any place else. And much of it exists and even prospers today, encouraged by people like Lee Zeldin, who seem more aligned with the Deep South than the South Shore. But that doesn't mean we need to define ourselves using this low standard. I've lived in Suffolk County all my life, and I know we're better than this. Lee Zeldin is a perfect example of how racism and hatred can spread both locally and on the national stage. He brought the Trumps to Suffolk. He brought Steve Bannon here. And given the opportunity, he will bring much more ugliness to our communities if he believes it will further his political career. We've seen the lengths that he will go to, and there's no reason to expect that the brakes will be applied anytime soon. We the people, we're the ones with the power. But only if we choose to unite and use it. None of this should come as a surprise. I'm not calling Lee Zeldin a white supremacist to insult him. I'm simply stating a fact, a fact that can be proven with his actions, his votes, his words. Suffolk County is capable of and deserving of so much better. But progress is never just handed to us. We have to work hard for it. And that work needs to begin now, in earnest. This is not who we are. And this blemish on Suffolk County isn't something that can only happen here. It can happen anywhere. It sneaks up on you when you stop fighting. I think that about says it.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I've just wondered for a long time.
It was in the back of my mind, you know. I just felt I had to say that.
Indeed. Yeah, you got to. And how long will this county continue to harbor that kind of leadership? And where are the people asking the questions? Where are the reporters getting answers? Well, they don't.
They can't get through to them either.
They get ghosted like every other constituent. He won't talk. He won't give answers or explanations. Not that they'd be worth listening to.
Well, you know, the reason he gives is that people are rude. Leftists take over and shout at him. And to that I say, democracy is sloppy. People shout. People talk over each other. It happens. It doesn't seem to be a problem anywhere else. People seem to be able to communicate with their constituents, people they disagree with even. Not Lee Zeldin. Will not hear them. Will not acknowledge them in any way. And that is unhealthy. That is extremely unhealthy, because you feel like your words don't matter, that nothing you do will make a difference, and that is so untrue. I cannot tell you the number of times in so many places. And I think Stony Brook is where I really learned that individuals make a difference. You're told over and over again in society that you can't change anything. You can't do anything. You're just one person. But the thing is, if nobody else is doing anything and you're just one person, you're the one person that's going to do everything. And I've met so many people at Stony Brook who feel that way and have done incredible things. And that's true not just at a university. That's true in so many places and in so many states and in so many countries.
In countless instances in life, you have opportunities and being in the place and seeing that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And then taking action in some way is, it's not always what everybody's thinking. There's so many distractions. There's so many reasons, you know, we blame ourselves as just being not enough. Well, you can count on there being moments where you are, and you may not be the only person that feels that way, and whatever the subject is. But in particular, this would upset me if I was being represented in this way.
Yeah, you're lucky because you still vote in Washington, and I don't think you have fascists there that are representing you in Congress. Maybe you do.
Not representing as many people, but I think there's certainly people that aspire to this level of white supremacy.
Well, I mean, there are people there with white supremacists in Washington State for sure, but in Congress. That's what I question.
No, actually, I think the leadership has been, to the contrary, not nearly as supportive as Zeldin's record.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, spoken out specifically about the January 6th. I think there's a freshman member and other people. Maybe that's in the House. But regardless, no, it's not as obvious. Somehow this still has support here. And I just don't understand. I can see, given the history you cited in some ways, but how there's such forgiveness for that in the present is astonishing.
Well, I don't know if it's forgiveness. It's basically...
allowance?
Yeah, it's basically, I think, an extension of how much can I do. Feeling that, you know, you voted... you did that, and you're just one person. But there is so much more you can do, simply by talking about it, simply by using whatever means at your disposal to get the message out, helping those who are fighting this kind of thing. That's how you see change. Voting is one step. It's not enough. It's obviously not enough because things have to be restructured. The right people have to be selected in order to move in a different direction. And above all, we can't lose faith that we have the ability to change things, to make it better. You know, in the Trump years, there was a lot of despair. A lot of people thought that we're done. It's never going to get better. And here we are in 2021. Things have gotten better. They're not as good as I want them to be, by far. But boy, are we in a better state of mind. Just, you know, with COVID-19, as, you know, that's another thing I didn't mention. There's so much with Lee Zeldin that we only have 3 hours. I'm not going to spend all 3 hours talking about him. He went to a super spreader event in Oklahoma where people died as a result of this.
I think the same one Irwin Cain was.
Yeah,
attending.
Irwin Cain died as a result of that super spreader. We don't talk about that. He mocked science. He, you know, at a time when it was indisputable among scientists and doctors that you couldn't gather in big crowds, you couldn't wear masks. I mean, you had to wear masks. He did neither. He gathered in a big crowd without wearing a mask. Didn't care. And it's that kind of selfish, ignorant attitude that made the virus so much worse. That's why we lost 600,000 people. Let's never forget that. 600,000 people, our fellow citizens. And yeah, you can say, oh, they were old, they were fat, they were unhealthy. Come on. Is this really how you speak of people? They deserve to be alive. They deserve to live.
And what about the future? given that clear record on responding in response to a phenomena, global phenomena even, how can he be counted on for any kind of leadership, let alone trusted?
No. You have to look at people's records. You have to look at their actions, their words, what they vote for. And, you know, I'm all for redemption and forgiveness and that kind of thing. And I'm sure on a personal level, I'd find redeeming qualities and all that kind of crap. But I have to look at who is representing me in the halls of Congress and say, oh, my God, this is horrible and must be stopped. Because this is New York, for God's sake. You know, I mean, I don't know how these things happen, but they can happen anywhere. And I think when you look at where we are right now and see it happening in front of us, that's a good wake-up call to anyone else anywhere. Yeah, I know I listed all the states. And, you know, in every single state in New England, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, all the representatives are Democrats. I didn't know that. But, they probably believe that fascism cannot take hold there. Maybe not tomorrow. But it's never far away. It's always just around the corner. So we have to be vigilant. We have to pay attention and speak out whenever something comes up that you have a problem with.
If you'd like to share your thoughts about this, specifically in the Long Island area in this district, please write us otw@2600.com, and we'll read your letter and consider it.
That's our email address. I wish we could take phone calls. I know we'd have a ton of them tonight, but as I mentioned, we're in a remote location. Can't take phone calls. When we get back into the studio, which hopefully won't be too much longer, we'll be able to do things like that. But, you know, on that subject, we're in great shape. Well, maybe not great shape. We should be in better shape. We should have met the 70% goal that Joe Biden set for July 4th for just a single jab of one of the vaccines. And I think we're at 67%. That's just a single, for full vaccination, I think we should be at 70%. I think we're in the 40s or 50s on that, which is certainly not good enough, but it's so much better than other countries, and I can't understand how that is. You know, nobody is more excited about going back to normal and doing things with other people than me. Yeah, try me out. Nobody's more enthusiastic than me on that. I can prove it. But you have to be realistic and realize that if there's a lot of dumbasses out there that aren't taking it seriously and refusing to get a vaccine, then the virus is still going to be there. And we're already seeing that. We're seeing that in states. And see if you can figure out what's going on here. States where the vaccine level is low, somehow the virus levels are rising. Yeah, say it again. The vaccine level is low, and somehow, it might be a total coincidence, the virus levels are rising. Got our greatest minds working on this one, but I suspect it's because people aren't taking this seriously enough in those places. And in so doing, they're risking the health of so many other people and ensuring that COVID will be around for a long time to come. You must really like COVID. You must really like all of this remote learning and isolation and things like that, because, you know, the rest of us are trying to get rid of this once and for all. And by refusing to take it seriously or getting people afraid of vaccines, you're ensuring that the disease will be around and not go anywhere. Now, other countries have a much poorer record of distributing the vaccines, and some of these places would fall over themselves to get what we're throwing out. And we have to throw it out because it expires. If people don't use it, it expires. It's so typical of America that we have so much that we waste, that the rest of the world needs. But, you know, what's happening in the UK is what really is has got me kind of worried, because coming up in just a few days, they're going to be just dropping all restrictions.
Yeah, I saw a report. Apparently no guidance, no suggested mask, no categories or anything. They're just relieving themselves of the entire scheme, going right back to as though nothing has gone on. And you were aware of some of their numbers, I think?
Well,
percentage of vaccination rate, I mean, the rate of vaccination?
It was considerably lower than here.
Which was really surprising, given how they had such cohesion with NHS and support for it. But I don't know exactly if this was related to securing vaccines or just distribution itself.
I mean, their numbers are not bad, actually. They claim 86% of the adult population has gotten the first dose, and more than 63% have gotten the second dose. So, you know, if you look at those numbers, these are adults. I'm not sure how much it's being distributed amongst children who are also susceptible to this. It's too early to just drop everything and say, yeah, we're free and clear now. They had 60,000 people today at Wembley Stadium, unmasked, and obviously not social distanced. I don't know if they were all vaccinated. If they're all vaccinated, great. But
they're also from out of town.
Yeah, there are a lot of people from around Europe as well. And I know Germany was pretty upset by this when they had their game last week. In Wembley. Yeah, it's you have to be careful with these things. And we have the Olympics coming up in a few weeks. Japan's vaccination rate is abysmal. So, you know, it's the thing with a virus, you have to be complete. You have to be thorough. You can't just vaccinate one part of the world and think that's going to solve everything. Might make things a little bit better for the people there for a little while, but eventually you'll go right back to where you were if you don't cover everybody. So, yeah, I'm worried about this. I really am. We don't seem to be taking it as seriously as we should. We don't seem to have learned lessons.
People are still being stricken with this. There was a leader, I can't remember which country, I think it was in Europe, that was taken in for low blood oxygen. I'm not sure if it was exactly COVID or a variant thereof. I don't have the details in front of me, but stuff like that's going on all the time. I think India is still recovering in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And Indonesia, I saw some imagery from there as far as treating people that are becoming sick and so forth. So the developing world is certainly not over the infectious part of this, that phase, that initial phase. So, I mean, the compassion and understanding and response should also be something we're concerning ourselves with, whether it's in suburbia or elsewhere in the world.
85.4% of people in Vermont have been vaccinated. So that's good. They're number one. They're the first. And number 50 is Mississippi. 46.3%. It's almost half. It's pretty disgusting that we're not all doing well. There's no reason for it.
Yeah, and there's areas, I think specifically with London, there was like pockets, different parts of a densely populated area like that. That is where variants occur, and with low vaccination rates in various neighborhoods and parts of large cities like that, we can have surprises if we're not careful.
This is one of the reasons why I say Suffolk County is capable of so much more than what it's given credit for, because we're doing well as far as vaccination rates. In fact, New York is among 21 states and District of Columbia that have met the vaccination goal of at least 70%. Having gotten at least one shot, by July 4th. So, you know, we did all right. We did good.
I know the large site that was vaccinating, that seems to have been, for the most part, ramped down in the area. It's not as necessary as more clinicians and pharmacies and various local clinics can accommodate people as they inquire and are able to get in for their scheduled dose wherever they may be in that, or just get questions answered. You know, your primary physician is more than capable and ready to address those concerns and also help guide you through the process itself. Perhaps more so than when large amounts of people were rushing and really trying to get themselves inoculated so they could get back to work or do whatever it was that made that so pressing just in daily life as we transitioned. So it's exciting and totally within everyone's grasp. And, wow, I don't know. It's surreal. Having sort of lost a year, and I put that in quotation, it wasn't a lost year, but it was, it's very interesting to be now a year, year and a half on from that, having memories now of something so, so alarming and strange, both our initial memories and then voids throughout, I guess, the year, but... not something we should lose sight of because it has to go differently in the future. This was not the way, not the best way, I think, to respond and take care of one another. We did all right for the most part, but there were so many unnecessary deaths. So much of that was due to lack of trust.
And politicization of things that are not political. Health issues should never be political issues. I'm just reading a story now about something that's going on in southwest Missouri. Apparently, healthcare workers in the Ozarks are facing more living hell as hospital beds are filling up again, this time with cases from the Delta variant. And those numbers are skyrocketing in a place called Branson and other areas. The vaccination rate is so low that it's made national news. Caitlin McConnell wrote about this on Facebook, posted it on the health system of the area. And it's quite a story. A patient we had yesterday is tragically not with us today, her post read. A COVID-19 nurse manager shared with me a very impactful story from a patient in his 40s in the COVID unit who passed last night. We had him for a week, and unfortunately he continued to deteriorate to the point requiring intubation. Prior to intubating, he became very tearful. He told the nurses he didn't think he needed to get vaccinated and now wishes he had, and he was so sorry. Since the pandemic began last year, McConnell said Cox Health, which operates 6 hospitals in the Ozarks, has aimed to be transparent and inform the public on what healthcare workers are seeing with the virus. That communication is key, she said. This is one person, but it is the example of the worst-case scenario of this pandemic. Hearing about not just statistics, but this very real person really resonated with me. The sentiment was he wished he had made a different choice. On Thursday, hours after McConnell posted about the man dying from COVID-19, Cox Health CEO Steve Edwards took to Twitter. He tweeted that a recent 32% positive rate of symptomatic tests was very concerning and that 4 children, one as young as a few weeks old, had been hospitalized with COVID-19. If you are making wildly disparaging comments about the vaccine and have no public health expertise, you may be responsible for someone's death, he said. Shut up. And I say that to anybody who is speaking out against the vaccine without any public health expertise. Shut up. You're killing people.
And selfish.
So, yeah, this is terrible to read about. And the post finishes, at this time we have 12 Stone County residents hospitalized with COVID-19. 11 of those 12 hospitalized cases are unvaccinated. These numbers are clear. The vaccine is working. These numbers are hand-counted and not computer-generated. This is real data from our county. And the comments are what you expect. No thanks. I'm not a lab rat. Wait and see what the side effects are. You're not changing how my DNA works. So, how dare you scare people into getting this poison, one woman wrote. No matter your stance, scaring people into making a medical decision is wrong. Oh, really? Scaring people into saying if you don't do this, you're going to die or get sick? That's wrong. Don't say that. Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. Many more, though, said something intelligent. I'm so sorry to his family. I beg each person reading this to please get vaccinated. We shouldn't be losing so many loved ones. We all know somebody who is spreading misinformation about this. Challenge them. Speak up to them. Negate what they say. Spread true information. It's so, so important. And this is a good time to play this public service announcement.
I first got the vaccine, number one, as obviously to protect myself, but honestly to protect my family. I've had direct discussions after getting the vaccine with members of my own family, and I think in general there was just kind of overall skepticism, especially in the Black community, but in Black and brown communities alike. There are historic health inequities, and so there are reasonable concerns from members of both communities. That's a community that I belong to as well, and that's why I had to inform myself and look at the data myself. The data was very reassuring, and one thing for me as a Black American was seeing how diverse the patient population was in each trial and feeling comfortable with that as well. There is lots of misinformation in the media, and it's hard to combat that. And so I would go with trusted sources, medical professionals, people in your community, people in your family. Ask about their experiences and get familiar.
And if we qualify as trusted people in your life, you can ask us, and we'll tell you our experiences. We got vaccinated pretty early on, and things have been... I can't really say things have been smooth for me, but it's not because of the vaccine. I had my kidney stone adventure, and now, oh boy, now I'm convinced I've got Lyme disease. The reason I think that, well, there's ticks everywhere. Can't blame that on the vaccine. And I got one of the we get bites all the time. In fact, just before showtime, what was the kind of tick that I had on my arm?
You had a lone stick, Lone Star tick. On your finger.
Very exotic. And I didn't realize they moved so fast. I thought it was a spider. But, I took care of that. But the deer ticks are very tiny. You can barely see them. They're just like a little, you don't know if it's a scab or just, a little dot. You have to examine yourself and your loved ones and use tweezers to pull these things out and get rid of them.
Put some ointment on it?
Yes, definitely.
Clean it?
But in this particular case, apparently that wasn't enough because I had this red mark. It just kept getting bigger and bigger every single day. What I did yesterday, it's kind of cool, actually. I called my health care provider. I didn't call them. No, I went online to my health care provider, who I will not name because it might be considered an endorsement or a condemnation or whatever. I sent them a picture of the mark, and they called me in 15 minutes. Not because they were panicking, but that's the deal. It's online, whatever, telemedicine. You get a call from a doctor within 15 minutes. Doesn't cost you anything, and they tell you what's up or what they think is up. So based on that picture, they were concerned. I said, we're going to prescribe you some antibiotics at your local pharmacy. And they did. And now I'm taking that. All done within a couple of minutes, taking a picture, which I need to erase because I don't want to save that picture. Hopefully it's getting better now. And I caught it nice and early or it just could be a bad bite. I don't know for sure if it's Lyme disease, but I have been feeling crappy in the last couple of days, which you can imagine doing a 3-hour version of the show now is it's going to be a real test for me. But headache and joint aches and not really a fever, but just feeling, you know, kind of icky.
Yeah, definitely you have got so many options, but you have to respond to it. And if you are outside at all, if you were this weekend, if you haven't, you should be vigilant just specifically for this particular pest and the transmissible diseases that all the different varieties of them can convey. I'd never, ever, ever been around this type of pest in my life as much. And though this breakthrough in ability to diagnose it is great, there's been plenty of deferred medicine and treatment because of the pandemic situation, this is not something you should ignore. It's very serious, and it's a particularly bad year. So if you're in any kind of rural outdoor environment, you basically, I don't know how it happens necessarily, but you sort of like brush them up when you're walking, and I believe they attach to you that way, like through pant legs and socks. So tucking in clothing and wearing light colored clothing, I hear, is helpful. And of course, there's various sprays and toxic and non-toxic that you can use. But it is so crucial here in the summertime, keeping these bugs off you, and if you do see them, getting them off you as quickly as possible. And
you generally feel them. You feel an itch,
yeah.
And then you might see something that looks like a little dot on your skin, and it kind of rises up. You might think that's a scab. In many cases, it's a tick. It's a little tiny tick. And you can pull it out with tweezers. You got to be careful. Make sure you get all of it.
I've seen at least 3 or 4 different ones get close to me.
If you're the kind of person who really wants to follow up, you put them in a little bag and you can take them to your doctor, or you can just flush them, which is my choice.
I was going
to
do a photo essay.
It's
doing some microscopy photography.
The important thing is you catch it early, as Kyle said, and you're thorough and you're always checking every time you go out. There's all kinds of repellent you can use too, and natural stuff as well that won't be harmful. So there's no reason to give up and say, I'm not going to go outside anymore because of this, but be smart when you do. Don't wear stuff that exposes your skin too much.
And there's things you can do with your landscaping. You can create pathways. You can keep places where you are active, keep them cut a little bit, as to your liking, but just to keep the brush and tall grasses down. So that if you're going from one place to another in your area on your property, that you minimize the amount of surface area that they can kind of hang out and just grab you as you're going by.
I cannot imagine how landscapers do it, because they're out there every day in all kinds of terrain. They must be attacked mercilessly.
They probably wear like three layers of clothes. They probably have gaiters or some kind of like thing that they just wear over their boots or something, and or like a full like jumpsuit over other clothing.
But they don't. I see them walking around. They're not dressed like that. they're exposed in many ways sometimes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like a landscaped lawn or like a driveway, to me that's not that rural. But some places are more far-flung, and they have less manicured sort of artificial growth. Someone
ticks,
who's just mowing a lawn.
If I'm getting ticks just by walking outside, I think that I could get ticks by walking on a manicured lawn as well. You know, I'm not even going onto grass. I'm staying on pavement, and I'm still getting ticks jumping on me somehow. It's real. It's pretty crazy.
Right, but if they're going to manicured site, from one to another, mm-hmm. and just stepping from their machine back to the pavement and then back to their machine, they're not interacting with it that much. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I got one inside my own office earlier. How did I do that? I wasn't even outside. They came inside.
They're probably on your pant leg.
I look, yeah, but I didn't go outside at all today.
Maybe you did yesterday.
So what, they stayed overnight on my pant leg? And
they sleep over?
Oh, my God.
What's
goodness.
Stopping them?
Okay, but that's my point. They're everywhere. They're inside. They're in the house.
That's what we're talking about.
I don't mean to panic people, but these damn ticks are everywhere.
No, this is a friendly public service conversation for those of you in the Suffolk County area and the tri-state area, even.
There is one solution that we suggest. Wild turkeys. I'm not even kidding. Wild turkeys eat ticks with passion all day long, maybe all night too, but you might see them walking around or, you know, in a pack in these areas. Stay out of their way because they will chase you and you will run. Wild turkeys are a great thing to have, but we need more of them. And if we had more of them, we'd have less ticks.
Yeah, I've looked into this a little bit, and you can create little kind of turkey-friendly sites. I think that's a thing, and turkey experts might tell you. Now, I'm not a representative of the local, environmental authority here, but I do know that there are structures like small, like a little in-ground kind of pond, like a bird bath. They enjoy those. You can make little sites that wild turkeys enjoy and will they'll hang out more. But they do travel. They travel in big packs, and they roam all throughout various neighborhoods. They might come down your cul-de-sac. They'll be going through your lawn and maybe get stuck by some fencing. You have to open some gates for them. They're crafty, though, and just pretty hardy creatures, and they forage for bugs and all kinds of things, and are really, really quite a beneficial creature to have in an environment that is so overrun with these ticks and other pests. And there's a lot of debate. I think people get really hung up on deer populations and the techniques and various efforts to control that. There's arguments and a lot of good techniques there and studies, but it's also this kind of bird behavior that is great to watch, but also takes care of this.
I should point out to people that might be a little concerned. Well, first of all, we're going for another 2 hours, so that's something to be super concerned about. Yeah, you might hear that noise. That's not my stomach. That's thunder.
Do you want me to bring up those levels? I can just
you can take that microphone outside.
I'll go ahead and do that.
No, go outside with the microphone. We're near a door here, but be careful because I don't know if microphones attract lightning. And you can just tell us if you. I think rain has begun. I should point out that we're under a severe thunderstorm warning, a severe thunderstorm warning for the next 20 minutes or so. Now, what Kyle hasn't thought of is that, first of all, that's not on, Kyle. I'm not hearing anything on this. You told me to bring up this channel, right? Yeah, there's nothing. It doesn't matter. The point is, severe thunderstorm warning, so be careful. Don't go outside and hold up metal objects or anything like that. Basically, a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect until 2 p.m. on Tuesday, yes, today. Damaging wind gusts, quarter-sized hail are possible. The best chance of storms in general will be from now until about 9 p.m. And this has nothing to do with Elsa, the tropical storm. All right, rather than spend the rest of the night trying to figure out why the microphone's not working, we can just talk about the storm that's raging around us. You just went outside. What's it like?
It's incredible. It's a monsoon.
Okay.
This is like full-on storminess coming at us.
We might have issued an emergency alert on WUSB Stony Brook, which is the station you're listening to right now. And we might have sounded like dumbasses for, that's close, for not knowing about it. But we're remote, so we can't actually hear if that happens. So if there's emergency alert warning, we will continue speaking as if we don't know about it because we don't. That's just the way it is. Okay, you think it's that one now? Oh, yeah, I think it is.
I'm trying. It's a powered mic. So
okay, so why don't you go outside? But how will you hear me? You're going to have to listen carefully.
Hold on, I got to turn up the levels. Yes, I'll wave or something.
I can't see you back. Okay.
Why do I need to be out there, though?
Well, I assume you wanted to narrate the storm as it's happening. Okay, it's nice and loud now. All right, we can't spend all night doing levels, Kyle, so I'll either go outside or not. Okay. Kyle's on his way outside now in the middle of the monsoon and the heavy thunder, and hopefully we'll hear his voice in a second.
Yes, okay, I'm here.
You sound very far away for some reason.
I don't know if you can hear me. I'm going to assume you can. So what I'm seeing is an incredible amount of rain and ongoing lightning.
I can hear the thunder.
I can't really see the lightning yet.
Well, it's still daytime, that's why. Okay, well, I think we've established that it's raining. For some reason, you're coming in very low, but we're getting the rain okay. Were you speaking directly into the microphone? Oh, you weren't. Well, speak directly into the microphone. That's what they're for. Wasn't speaking into the microphone. My goodness.
All right, well,
that's better.
Speak into it.
Yeah, that's what it
sounds
like.
Maybe this is a little better.
Uh-huh, absolutely. Of course, you still can't hear me. Okay, so it's raining now, I take it. All right, well, you know what, Kyle?
It is indeed raining incredibly hard, and, well, as you can hear, there's a little bit of thunder, and, I don't know.
All right, well, let's leave the microphone
there might be,
out there.
Flooding. I would definitely check. There might be, oh, wow.
Oh, wow, what?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God,
that's
what?
That's pretty loud.
That's pretty loud, what? Oh, okay, hold on. Let's listen.
I was just saying there might...
Yes, that was loud.
Might be a flash flood warning.
And based on you saying, oh, my God, and the actual thunder, I'd say we're about 3 miles away, 4 miles away from the actual center of the storm.
Is that coming in?
Yeah, it's coming in fine. Why don't you come in now, Kyle, because this is getting a little awkward and silly. Yeah, you come in. We'll leave that out there. The microphone's not getting wet, right?
No, it's in a dry area.
Okay, good. Well,
so you could hear me?
Yeah, we've been talking to you just fine.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I'm asking the listeners.
Yeah, you couldn't hear me, unfortunately, but...
I'll hook up headphones next time. I just didn't have time.
Hey, normally we'd be saying it's 7:01 and Finn is outraged that we have gone into his show, but Finn's not here this week, so we're going all the way into his show for another 2 hours of Off the Wall here on WUSB Stony Brook. If you've never heard Off the Wall before, it's the show that precedes the show that you apparently listen to at 7 o'clock, where we talk about current events and things going on in our world and unusual events like thunderstorms in the middle of the damn show.
This is appropriate because the theme song for Finn would have lightning.
That's right. His show begins with a thunderclap.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, my God. And it sounds just like that. Wow. Sometimes you think there's a higher force at work. This is one of those moments. My goodness. All right, so folks, if you're on Long Island, Suffolk County particularly, guess what? It's raining. You know this already. There's a thunderstorm going on. Why do we need to tell people there's a thunderstorm when it's obvious there is a thunderstorm?
Because we're a radio station. That's what radio stations do, E. We're informing the people.
Well, we're not making this up. It's not a sound effect. It sounds pretty good, but this is real. Wow. Oh, I forgot to turn the sprinkler off.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's too late now. It's cycled. Anyway, so, yeah, severe thunderstorm warning.
Probably flooding.
I don't know if the severe thunderstorm warning is expiring. By the time my phone gets it, it's like tomorrow. According to the latest alert I got, 7:15 p.m. is when the warning expires, but the watch continues until around 9 o'clock. But, again, could be outdated. It's my phone. Don't ever trust my phone for anything. Wow. Okay, so here we are in our second hour. And what do you feel like doing this hour?
I don't know. I was...
Let's not talk about Lee Zeldin. Let's not talk about COVID-19. Get those two things out of the way.
Should we talk about pipelines? I know Line 3 is in desperate need of being stopped.
I don't even know what that is. Line 3?
Line 3 is in Minnesota, I believe.
Okay.
And it's part of the gas pipeline from Canada, from the oil shale projects, and they're not doing an environmental impact study on various crossings to waterways that are part of indigenous territory, and they're not being disputed. They're not getting a lot of pushback, and there's a lot of really brave indigenous women and leadership out there trying their best to get this story to those that understand how the hydrologic cycle works and how local people are impacted by these projects adversely, and especially the way the workers, the contractors that come in and abuse the people, you know, thousands, 5,000 workers, I think, are out there. And I've seen these camps, I've seen the kind of builds they're doing. We've seen it on our trips in Alberta, and there's a lot of new metal, a lot of money, a lot of pump jacks.
It was so ugly seeing that the landscape just being completely destroyed by this.
Bisected and divided and bifurcated, broken, cracked.
Yeah.
That's what fracking is all about. So this is like the worst oil quality, and they want to pipe it. It takes an incredible amount of energy, so they have all these pumping stations, and yeah, it's going to take all these thousands of guys who basically set up and build these little boom-bust communities out in lands that would otherwise not get any building, any infrastructure, any kind of attention, let alone money for, community centers and, fiber optics. Like, if it was a fiber optic cable, I think, that was being run, you know, under a body of water, they would do a study.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, this is required. We can't run a cable without some kind of impact study. And somehow pipelines over and over again get a pass. And we did a story a couple weeks ago, I read, about the teenagers that found, like, a fire extinguisher, like a broken fire extinguisher, doing like a Bellagio thing with benzene and gasoline and natural gas.
On the pipeline that got hacked.
The Colonial Pipeline,
but
that one.
It didn't get hacked, but their computer systems.
Right.
Yeah.
No stories about that oil leak. Uh-huh. Somehow, and that's...
This oil leak had been going on, and they couldn't even find the leak. They weren't aware of it. They couldn't find it.
They probably thought of it as a rounding error on their flow meters.
To them, this kind of thing is just normal, the price of business. So yeah, these pipelines are evil. They're bad. They always, always cause problems.
And I think in the context of energy production, like even like natural gas itself has been touted as like, you know, a transition fuel or something that is, you know, necessary and clean. Well, it is and it isn't, and there's incredible, like, the studies of, like, infrared photography. I know there are token attempts by some of the producers to do a better job of leak detection and stuff like that at these production sites, but there's an incredible amount of gas and greenhouse gas specifically that is emitted just in the course of that business, let alone, like, massive leaks and
Man,
so
just,
forth.
Just got an alert from Newsday. Severe thunderstorms moving through Long Island until 10 p.m., some with high winds moving through Long Island Tuesday evening. National Weather Service warns Tropical Storm Elsa may bring Long Island heavy rains and dangerous rip currents later in the week. These thunderstorms should intensify and turn more to the southeast as they approach the local area. They arrive on Long Island between 7 p.m. and 8:30 p.m., Well, they've arrived. They're here. As early as 6:30, storms are moving through Long Beach and Glen Cove. That's to the west, heading for Santa Rita on Ronkonkoma after 7 p.m. Some of the storms could have winds of 70 miles per hour that could damage trees and affect power. You think? Yeah. 70 miles per hour. So be careful out there, folks. Watch out for... And, of course, there might be flooding as well. Flash flooding, 1 to 3 inches of rain in a very short amount of time. These storms have been triggered by high heat, humidity, and they will bring potentially damaging winds, marginally severe hail and rains that could cause flash flooding along with frequent lightning. So many hazards out there. So many hazards. So best just stay inside and listen to the radio. I'm sorry, Kyle. That was a bulletin I had to report. So how do people get more information about how they can help or just... get the information that you're getting, the news, or
update? Follow it. Follow the story. I know Stop Line 3. There's a lot of information on social media, but I think StopLine3.org or .net, I think, is one of the sites.
That's the name of the movement, right? Stop Line 3.
Okay. Absolutely is what is being done. It's much in the same vein of the Keystone XL, and they're trying to raise awareness and get the attention of the administration to really stand up to this, because it's a bad deal. It's really, really old technology, and more of the same, and we do not need more of the same, and to be abusing people, specifically indigenous women and those that don't have, just so that the rest of these industries and the world can sort of profit and have cheap energy.
So I found a site, stopline3.org. That's stop line, one word, and the number 3.org. And that'll give you all the information that that we have here, and you'll be able to help out if you want.
Yeah, I'll share more as I'm following it myself, and it is much like some of the leadership things that we've referred to. It's something that's been going on for a long time, and really, at some point, should end. Really should end. There are so many, many diverse ways to solve some of these problems, and, you know, we need to be a lot more considerate of whose environment we're staking claim to, and how in many ways it's an example of history repeating itself.
Okay, we have this just in as well. Now, apparently everything happens after 7 p.m. because we always end at 7 p.m. and now everything is happening. We just got this. Eric Adams had a lead of 1 percentage point over his nearest rival, Catherine Garcia, in the New York City mayor's race on Tuesday. I like how they call it the New York City mayor's race. When it's actually the primary, because everybody knows that the Democratic candidate is going to win in November, so we might as well have the race now. He had a lead of 1 percentage point. That's according to a new count that includes tens of thousands of absentee ballots in the contest. With most absentee ballots now slated to be accounted for, Mr. Adams led Ms. Garcia by 8,426 votes. Maya Wiley, who emerged late in the primary as a left-wing standard bearer, ended up in third place in the tally released on Tuesday. She had come in second place in the initial count of in-person ballots cast on primary day and during the early vote period. The results have not been finalized, but they follow a remarkable stretch in the city's political history. The race began in a pandemic, took multiple unexpected twists in the final weeks, and most recently it was colored by a vote tallying I don't want to call it a scandal. Debacle, I guess, is a better word, at the Board of Elections.
It was like a miscount because they accidentally counted demo votes or demo ballots.
Yeah.
They really, really messed up the execution of that.
If you were trying to mess up, that's how you would do it. Anyway, so it looks like Adams. And I'm not going to say anything. Because I'm not in New York, so, you know what, whatever. You voted for this, this is what you're going to get.
It's a harbinger of an attitude and a direction, for better or for worse.
It's just you're putting an ex-cop in the mayor's office, for God's sake. I mean, for the problems that we have in the city, and you elect an ex-cop, a guy who was supporting Stop and Frisk. And he's a Democrat. He's a Democrat's doing this. I've nothing to say. Nothing.
I thought biting your finger was a sign you weren't going to say anything.
Let's talk about something else. Yeah, so here we are. We're filling in for Finn tonight. So if you're tuning in for Finn, I'm sorry. He's not here tonight. He'll be here next week. We have a severe thunderstorm going. I think it's passed. I don't think there's... I hear like a staticky noise, so I'm going to turn that down. Maybe our microphone is being damaged by heavy rains. But it's not thundering anymore. We're going to keep an eye on that and keep people updated. But there are other things going on Long Island that are of interest. One of them involves the local cable company, which you may know as Cablevision, or you may know them as Optimum, or you may know them as Altice. Yeah, a lot of names. I'm not quite sure why so many names. Altice bought Optimum, which is what Cablevision has been called the last bunch of years. But Altice is making a change in their speeds that they are offering to the... I don't know why Kyle's taking so long to bring a microphone in. Maybe he got lost out there. Hey, Kyle, coming back? Kind of half the show here. Getting distracted outside by the rain. We're talking about Altice now. They are reducing the upload speeds by up to 86% this month. Yeah, 86%. Now, this story came from Ars Technica, and I was simply blown away by that. First of all, our upload speeds right now are a mighty 35 megabits per second. 35. Now, I was comparing this to what other people in other parts of the country get, and they get many hundreds uplink if they have fiber. We don't have fiber around here, and there are many reasons for that. One of the reasons being complete and total corruption of Brookhaven Town, which is one of the towns in Suffolk County. Apparently, Brookhaven Town, and this is not confirmed, this is not something that I can prove, but it's what is being said everywhere you go.
It's common.
What's common?
The tactics you're talking about.
I haven't talked about them yet.
Oh, sorry.
You interrupted me.
Sorry. I'm really passionate about this.
Well, let me say it first, then you can be passionate about it. Well, so in Brookhaven Town, Verizon does not offer fiber, even though they have wired fiber around, because Brookhaven Town wants Altice, Optimum, Cablevision to be the only provider. Now, again, I can't prove that, but that is what is being said. And you have to ask yourself, why doesn't Verizon offer Fios in Brookhaven Town? There are some places where you can get Fios. I'm not sure exactly how they did that, but you could be one door away from a house that has Fios and not be able to get it, because Brookhaven Town will not allow Verizon to wire your house. So, okay, the alternative is Altice fiber, which is, we see boxes being put up throughout Suffolk County, and apparently they are aiming to offer fiber, which is good, but it would be nice to have competition. But none of that has anything to do with what we're talking about here, which is the craziness of reducing speed. Now, 35 megabit per second upload, it's not very fast, but it's what they got. For instance, if you get a package which is, say, 100 megabit downlink, or 200 megabit downlink, or even 300, 35 is all you're going to get as an uplink.
It's not full duplex. It's not going the same in both directions.
Fiber is. Fiber, you'll get something like 900 both ways, which is incredible. And it's what people in many parts of the country and the world are used to. We're stuck at 35, but not for long, because what Altice is doing is changing plans, or not really changing plans, but changing speeds for people who change their plans. So in other words, let's say you have a 100 megabit downlink, and you say, you know what, I want to change to 200 megabit downlink. Altice will say, oh, great, okay, we're going to charge you more for that, and we're going to take that 35 megabit per second uplink speed and reduce that to 5. Yeah, we're going to reduce your 35 slow-ass uplink speed to a crippling 5.
It's like strangling your voice.
It's punishing you, and they will do this to you if you upgrade or downgrade. As you make any changes to your account, this is what is going to happen to you. Now, if you don't do anything to your account, you'll stay at a whopping 35. But if you make any changes whatsoever, you're gonna find yourself going way down to 5. I'm dumbfounded by this. Now, apparently, they say they're doing this to bring themselves in line with other ISPs in the industry. So they're saying other ISPs offer a super slow speed, and they feel it's only fair they do the same. There's no reason for them to do this. Their backbone is not being crippled by overuse or anything like that. We just went through a pandemic where lots of people were using online services, and the network held up just fine. They're doing it just because they can. Literally, just because they can.
I have a theory. I think that creating a fair amount of discomfort for people that are in older packages will, I don't know, it'll generate an environment where it's desirable to buy some brand new thing that they're offering.
That's the thing. People want to buy something brand new, like fiber, but it's not available. You know, only 20% of their network is fiber. And some places may never get fiber. So they're just punishing people because they can punish people, and there's nowhere for them to go. It's, you know, look this up. Look up Altice and reducing their internet upload speeds and fiber and Brookhaven Town and Verizon. There is intrigue here. Enough intrigue for an ABC miniseries, I swear.
Somebody's making a bad call in their leadership, and they really ought to walk this back. Investors will take notice. People that are, you know, making sure they're permitted to function in the area will also take note when, you know, people get upset enough and the consumers wake up and say, hey, we're being preyed upon. I saw this tactic. I knew this thing was going on. I recall stories in Seattle from way back when Seattle Utilities put in a bunch of fiber optics, and the conundrum was that none of that could be lit up and used to create a public utility commission in the city because Comcast and the entrenched broadband providers who are offering subpar DSL and whatever stuff over coax were basically allowed free rein because they had signed sort of exclusive deals for the state or for the wider region, and so even a large city like Seattle couldn't make use of their own infrastructure because they couldn't attach anything and run all of the other aspects that would make it functional for the city, because the wider network was or wider market was supposedly spoken for in these other firms. It's corrupt, as you said, but it's so incredibly common, and people need to add it. That's why you got to go to boring meetings and have your voice and have your leadership really listen to what you as a consumer want in your area.
Well, you have to know what they're up to, and what you say is so true. You have to show up at these.
They train to game these local boards. I remember I did some video work for T-Mobile a long time ago, and I was cutting training videos of them going to various board meetings to learn to know how to speak to the boards and refer to their various projects that involves having antennas put up in their area. And this is incredibly important because there was a lot of pushback, rightful in many areas, because people did not want a lot of cell towers, 4G at the time, I guess, and you know, RF energy on top of their local store or whatever. So, you know, it's not unheard of from private communications companies and larger broadband providers to try to ink these things. Maybe Altice came in quick for the area with their subpar gigabit, and now when other providers came in, Brookhaven was like, well, we already got this little deal signed, which was nothing. It was like, you know, first to market, but nothing, like vaporware. But now maybe they'll come back with it. But Verizon is like, well, wait a minute. We've been trying to get into these markets and compete. What they really need to do is have genuine competition.
It's just really weird to be in the position of defending Verizon, because usually Verizon are the ones who are playing by these horrible tactics. For instance, when we had DSL from a company other than Verizon, you still had to use Verizon's lines. But another company would actually be the one providing you the service. So whenever it broke down, Verizon would simply not fix it because you weren't using them. And, you know, firsthand, I saw the shenanigans. They claimed that you weren't home when you were home, or something would just accidentally get cut and stay cut for 4 days. Nonsense like that. But, it goes both ways.
There are better ways to do this entirely. There could be like a public infrastructure trust that manages the larger backbone portions of it. If it's already something a city like in Seattle or elsewhere has built, or that a city and an area is funding in part with some kind of partnership. There's a lot of different ways to do it, and the way we do it tends to benefit the players that are concerning themselves with this all the time. And I hope. All the remote stuff is creating a renewed interest in how this stuff is, and given the infrastructure plans of this administration, I hope that special attention is given to doing this in ways that eliminate that kind of behavior.
Okay, we have to take a break. You're listening to an extended version of Off the Wall. We're on until 9 o'clock, filling in for Finn tonight. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll be back in a moment.
I was a little bit hesitant about the COVID vaccines when it came out. I was thinking, I wasn't going to get it until maybe, a year later. I wasn't sure after getting the vaccine what would happen, like if I was going to experience anything or if I was going to get sick. I heard a lot of doctors and coming through to get their vaccine. And heard their experience and their thoughts on the COVID vaccine. So that kind of made me change my mind. I actually didn't get sick, but I did have a sore arm. I did have some body aches, and I was really tired. I would definitely still encourage you to get the vaccine. It really passed my expectations. It was a very positive experience.
Okay. I would take those words to heart. All right, we have a bit of a surprise here, I think. Kyle, do we have somebody on the telephone? We do have a telephone. It's just we can't take phone calls because we don't have delay. But I believe we have our chief engineer, Frank Berger, joining us from Vermont. Frank, is that you?
Yeah, this is a 5G call, so it costs a lot of money.
I'm sure it does, and it's probably melting your brain at the same time. Where exactly are you? Well, not exactly, but where generally are you?
We're on the top of a mountain in Windham County, Vermont, about 1,300 feet. There's a log cabin up here, and basically I'm on vacation, so figured I heard you talking about 5G. I had to turn off the radio because, you know, things happen when I have the radio on.
That's certainly true. Things definitely happen whenever you're around the radio, in fact. We're having a severe thunderstorm down here, so that's a bit of fun.
Yeah, could you check on that?
I've been getting all the alerts every 2 minutes. Altice is sending me, whoa, there's an alert.
Why aren't I getting the alerts? I'm here and I'm not getting any alerts. You're in Vermont and you're getting alerts.
Well, there must be flash flooding.
Frank, did you hear our little tirade against Altice just now?
Yes, so I heard a little bit of it, and then I had to cut it off to make the call. But, I'm calling an 802 number from the 802 area code. That's weird, and you're not anywhere near here.
Well, you don't know that, but no, we're not. Yes, we have an 802 number that we forward to different numbers, and you're in an 802 now, so it's a fantastic coincidence, but that's really all
it's
it
amazing.
Is. Yeah, but...
Is this the only state that has one area code?
I don't know if it still does. The fact that it has a zero in the middle means that at one time it did. And I don't know if there are any other area codes in Vermont. You're in a position to find that out.
No, they are not. You can buy stickers that don't say VT. They say 802.
Okay.
You can buy them in all the schools.
I would think that would be 631 stickers down here, I'm pretty sure. But
only if you're...
Frank, tell us something about the connectivity up there, because you're always going on about this. You're saying how great the system is up there. Can you give us a comparison?
Yeah, the minimum is 1 gigabit per second. If you can't afford the $35 for that, they can take you down to 100 meg for like $10 a month. But if you really wanted more bandwidth, you could go to 400 gigabit for like $400 a month.
You need fiber here.
Frank, I don't know. I'm boiling over with rage right now after hearing what you just said, because those prices are, to quote Crazy Eddie, insane.
It's Vermont. It's like, you know, affordable.
Vermont, where the highest vaccine rates and the lowest prices with fiber and connectivity in general. What's the catch, Frank? There's got to be a catch.
There is none. It just works. They give you batteries, too, to keep it alive in a power outage.
They give you batteries. Wow.
Yeah, that's incredible. At 400 gigabits, it's like something an average person probably wouldn't have hardware that could make use of that.
It's probably for businesses that that use a lot of server power.
Right, but that could be anyone. In today's day and age, anybody could be running a business and need more resources, and I think that's ultimately what this is about. It's about matching the resources with the need that's out there so that people can get information moved around, and that's so incredible that they've created a market where you can actually entertain those speeds. Like, okay, if I can afford this and use it, I might be able to do that.
Okay, I figured it out. You're in Vermont. It's, you know, the countryside everywhere. You're on top of a mountain. Reception must be awful. You probably can't use this anywhere, right?
I have 5G, I mean 4G, 5 bars right now.
You know, you're really annoying me, Frank. All these things, it just seems to be no bad whatsoever. Everything is good, and we're struggling here.
Well,
just to...
we got tall mountains up here, 3,000, 4,000 feet, and there's towers on top of them. Matter of fact, this mountain has pylons for a tower, but it looks like that's from a long time ago. They put a log cabin over one of them. This mountain's too small, so they only use the tall ones for radio and cell phones.
Mountain's too small.
Wow.
Suffolk County needs more mountains.
We have Bald Hill. That's all we've got. And that's where our transmitter is.
That's where our transmitter is, yeah. Uh-huh. That's the highest point. Yep.
And it's doing a fine job. Doing a fine job for everybody out there.
All right, voices are coming out of it right now. Frank, what companies are involved here?
Yeah,
the phone company is called VTEL. V-T-E-L.
VTEL?
There is Verizon here, but Verizon has a minority. They're not as large as VTEL. And VTEL covers part of New York State, too, believe it or not.
It sounds like you're talking about a phone company in another country.
Yeah, it does.
But they run their own... Wow.
Well, it's all fiber optic. There's no more copper. They pulled out all the copper.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I don't like that. I don't like when they pull out the copper, because that means that, you know, if there's a power outage for like a week or something, your phone eventually will die.
Yep, unless you put a power backup on their power backup, and, you know, it'll work. Mine keeps going for about 2 hours.
Well, I think as more people move towards, like, hybrid energy solutions in their home, their entire source of power will be able to provide some kind of standby for that and other devices. I mean, as batteries become more popular in homes.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe technology isn't where Vermont has its failings. And how about white supremacy? You have any white supremacists representing you in Congress? We do. maybe that's something that you also have.
See, we got Bernie. We got we do have some Republicans in office, but they don't act like them most of the time.
You have Republicans, but they don't.
There's a guy with the Trump. There's one guy with a Trump flag up the road, but it's one out of, you know, a lot.
Wow. How do you get to Vermont, Frank?
I take the ferry from Port Jeff and then go up 95 and then straight up 91, and you get the whole state. You can keep going to Canada, too.
Well, not today you can't. It's kind of closed, but...
It's kind of closed, yeah. You can go to the border and then turn around.
I want to go to Vermont now. Like, a lot.
You do.
Wow. Well, Frank, tell us more about where you are, about the surroundings and the people and all that kind of stuff.
Well, actually, we've been talking to a lot of neighbors. Most of them are transplants from New York or New Jersey or, you know, Connecticut, and they won't leave here once they're up here. Let's see, what else? There are more cows than people.
Cows. I think that's the solution. More cows than people.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a sign in most of the restaurants we go to now. Well, they say if you're vaccinated, take off your mask, but maintain one cow distance.
One cow distance? That's more than 6 feet, isn't it?
Well, they underneath it, it says minimum 6 feet, but they said, what we recommend, one cow.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a unit of measurement that I think people are familiar with up there.
Yeah.
Oh,
not
yeah,
cow width, good. It's cow length, I assume.
Cow length, yeah. The width would be like 2 feet, or
yeah,
3 feet. You
know. Nose to tail, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I got you. That's a good technique.
There's no moose width either. That's too big. Although my neighbor said he was on camping the other day and a moose wandered by the property.
They have those there.
We don't have those here.
No, there aren't enough moose here.
Okay.
Moose and cow. We've got moose and squirrel, too.
Frank, is it hot and muggy up there?
You know a moose can be a cow.
Actually, it's actually like 75 degrees and a little humid, but breeze is blowing. You might even hear it on the phone, but it's beautiful. It almost hit 90 today down at the bottom.
Neat. Okay. Well, it's a little uncomfortable then, but not nearly as much as down here.
No.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you're having a great time up there. Wish we were there too. Really.
Yeah. You could do your show from up here. You know, we have connectivity here. You could do a high quality program from the top of a mountain.
Apparently, I could do a high quality program from anywhere there. If I could only do a high quality program, but.
Yeah, technical quality we're talking, you know. Mm-hmm. You're always good for program quality.
You're too generous. But anything else you want to share with our listeners while we're on?
No, that's about it. We got to head down the mountain before it gets dark. But I think we got time.
There's a psycho killer up on the mountain. That's what's going on up there, right? You got to get out before it's dark.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. All right, well.
We didn't do the 3,000-foot mountain today. Is we were worried about thunderstorms, and there's a fire tower up there that's all metal, and that would have been nice, but there Vermont Public Radio is on that mountain. So.
Okay, well, you know, I'm so glad we heard from you, calling us from Vermont, telling us about the hell that the place up there is, socialist hell.
Oh, yeah, it's hell, yeah.
Makes us just all the more happy to be here. Fighting our battles.
Yeah, I don't hear anything that resembles freedom.
No,
nothing. I mean, you know, there's just mountains and animals, and occasional humans.
Incidental, even.
Incidental humans. Yeah, we only saw two on the way up this mountain.
But you only saw two humans going up the mountain, so it's kind
of. Yeah. Well, they were coming down. We were going up.
Uh huh.
Is this a pathway? Is it like a trail on this mountain?
There's five trails leading to this one.
Okay.
And even the taller one is like five trails. Yep. So you can go down one, but you got to have two cars because they don't land you in the same place.
Okay, so
we're going down the same way we came up.
I see.
Are you driving up and down the mountain, or are you walking up and down the mountain?
Yeah, wait a minute. I thought you were hiking.
No, hiking. We're walking. We parked at the trailhead and walked up.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a trail access requires a car. That's
and it. Do you have connectivity all the way up and down the mountain?
I was getting dings all the way up the mountain for the weather alerts for your area. So, yeah, I would say, yeah.
He's getting dings walking up and down a mountain for weather here that I'm not getting any alerts for, and I'm in the middle of it. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you, Frank, for making us very much aware of where we are and how much better things are up there. We look forward to seeing you back down here soon.
We will, yeah. All right, it's great talking to you.
All right. Say hi to everybody. all the Vermonters.
I will.
All right.
I will do it on the cows.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Frank Burgert, our chief engineer in Vermont. See, things are possible. Upgrades of all sorts are possible.
He's living in some sort of future there.
He sure is. Sure
how's, that,
is.
How's that storm coming along?
Are we still outside? Is the microphone still outside? It's. I forgot which channel it was. This one? Didn't you bring the microphone in?
I think it's settled down. There's not much sound.
Yeah, I thought you brought the microphone inside. So.
Oh no, I was getting electrocuted or trying to see about what I could do to get electrocuted, and then I came back in when you were shouting.
Okay. Well, because you were out there for a long time.
I don't have an intercom for that kind of thing. I just thought we'd, maybe catch the tail end of it. But it seems to have passed. So everyone concerned?
It seems to have passed, but
it may be the first wave of it.
Yeah, we said until, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock? So, beware. Beware. Okay, see, I want to share good news. I really want to do that because we've been focusing on a lot of bad news. The good news is that lawmakers, they're good ones, have approved an oversight board for a proposed bullet train that will go through Long Island. Yeah. It's a proposal to build and sit down. I know the numbers are rather staggering. But, if you invest in infrastructure in the past, you don't have to invest so much in the present and the future. So just consider this something that's overdue. A proposal to build a $105 billion high-speed rail network that would cross Nassau and Suffolk counties with a tunnel under the Long Island Sound has cleared an early hurdle in Congress as lawmakers have approved who would oversee the project. It's awesome that we're talking about this. Let's make sure it happens. The Transportation Reauthorization Bill passed by the House of Representatives last Thursday includes an amendment authored by Representative Tom Suozzi of Glen Cove. Not a fascist, not a white supremacist. Yeah, we have those kind of representatives too. Calling for the creation of the North Atlantic Rail Interstate Compact. North Atlantic Rail Interstate Compact. Its purpose, according to the legislation, shall be to construct on an accelerated basis the new rail system stretching from New York City to Boston. The bill calls for the appointment of a board of directors for the project, with members appointed by the governors of the seven states through which the rail system would operate, by Amtrak and by Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. The proposal calls for the excavation of several rail tunnels in the region, including under the East River to Penn Station, through parts of Queens and Long Island, and from Port Jefferson across the Long Island Sound to Bridgeport, Connecticut. Bullet trains would reach speeds of up to 200 miles per hour. Can you imagine that? And Port Jefferson. I don't know if that means the train will stop in Port Jefferson, but theoretically it could, I suppose, and we can get on a train, go to Boston, 200 miles an hour. How awesome would that be?
It would be incredibly awesome.
We have federal legitimacy, said David Capel, the former Greenport mayor who was part of the team lobbying for the project. It's no longer pie in the sky. This is a moonshot that has lifted off. Oh, he's got some good sound bites there. You don't become the Greenport mayor for nothing. You have to know how to put these things together.
And instill some passion, some wonder.
A moonshot that has lifted off. Absolutely. Though the project has picked up considerable support by elected leaders, including Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone, who co-chairs its steering committee, still has a ways to go. The proposal would require approvals by each of the states affected and by the federal government. But look at the facts. The federal government, I think they're going to approve it. Pete Buttigieg in charge of transportation and all. And the states, why wouldn't the states approve this?
Yes, adds to the comprehensive transit plan.
You don't have idiots like Chris Christie in charge who will basically reject a project that would have been good in the past, which is what he did. So I'm optimistic about this. The effort, whose projected price tag is 10 times the size of the MTA's Eastside Access Mega Project, that's LIRR trains going to Grand Central Station. And it kind of makes sense because, you know, a 200-mile-an-hour bullet train that goes from Boston to New York City and goes underneath the Long Island Sound is about 10 times better than taking the LIRR to Grand Central instead of Penn Station. That's at least 10 times better than that. The effort has to be funded, obviously. But you know what, folks? There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of money being spent on all kinds of things. You know, like wars and military expenditures and things like that. That's just one thing. It's all kinds of waste, but also all kinds of money that can be used. We should stop telling ourselves that it can't be. If you don't give tax refunds to people who least need them, as we have done over the past few years, you have even more money. If you ask those people to pay even more, not substantially more, but something more, as many, many nations do, that's even more funding, and it makes the entire country better. That's how you build an awesome place.
Yeah, it's not like the same kind of debt as maybe war making and the consequences therein. And I think even arguments for increased security are specious when threats can be dynamic and not the same thing as they were 10 years ago. So, I mean, it just seems like, we spend a ridiculous amount of money on all kinds of crazy projects, known and unknown. This is clearly a bit of debt, right, but an investment as well, and something that, as you said, could be maintained.
Nassau County Executive Laura Curran has weighed in publicly for the first time on this project. She said on Friday she is very interested to see what happens with this down in Washington. Anything that gets more money for public transportation here on Long Island, I am for. Folks, this could happen. This could actually happen, and I think it would be a great thing. I really do.
Yeah, and have some more bicycle paths, maybe.
Why not?
Maybe have, like, a bicycle bar on the train.
Bicycle bar on the train. You know, this is the time to come up with ideas.
So just throwing that out there.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of military adventurism and waste of money, the United States is pulling out of Afghanistan. You might have heard about that. In fact, some people are claiming that the United States is pulling out without telling anybody, that we just kind of left overnight in a rush without saying a word. Not sure how true that is, but it's definitely something dramatic that's going on. And it's not just the United States. It's the whole NATO mission that's pulling out. And the Taliban is now taking over. Yeah. They're trying to rebrand themselves, if you can imagine that. Yeah, they're trying to present an image of a new Taliban, I suppose. A Taliban that actually is able to take care of the country. For instance, in June, when they took the district of Ayman Sahib in the north, the insurgent commander who now ruled the area had a message for his new constituents, including some government employees: keep working, open your shops, keep the city clean. The water was turned back on, the power grid was repaired, garbage trucks collected trash, and a government vehicle's flat tire was mended. A flat tire was mended. Way to go, Taliban. Iman Sahib is one of dozens of districts caught up in a Taliban military offensive that has swiftly captured more than a quarter of Afghanistan's districts, many in the north, since the U.S. withdrawal began in May. All part of the Taliban's broader strategy of trying to rebrand as capable governors of the nation, while they press a ruthless land-grabbing offensive across the country. The combination is a signal that the insurgents fully intend to try for all-out dominance of Afghanistan once the American pullout is finished. The situation is such that it's a testing period for us. Everything done in practice is being watched. That's according to the Taliban deputy commander and the head of the group's most violent wing in a radio broadcast to Taliban fighters. Behave in a good way with the general public. All right, we'll see what happens. Many people fear that civil war is around the corner. One thing for sure, though, in the 20 years that the West has been trying to control things in Afghanistan, hasn't really worked out. How much money was wasted? How many lives were lost that didn't have to be? You know, it's you ask yourself, how can we afford to build high-speed rail in this country? Well, by not embarking in adventurism like this. That's one way. And, yeah, you know, there's all sorts of things that we can say that we wish didn't happen in certain regions of the world. We wish they were they treated people in a nicer way, or they didn't harbor really nasty people. But, you know, at some stage we have to realize there's only so much that we can control, and that sometimes not getting involved in every battle, every regime, sometimes that's a statement as well. And sometimes there's power in that.
Strength and power. As someone who was against intervention from the outset so long ago, and who's witnessed this, I can't emphasize that enough. Just generations of young men and women, my peers,
mm-hmm.
I have personal stories I've shared on the radio about this that aren't even anything, really. I mean, so many people, I'm sure, have more where this fight touched them, this old fight, Orwellian fight. And the people that fought there, a lot of them, did their best. But there was no plan. There was no knowing when you've secured the country. There's a myth
mm-hmm.
that we're there to secure a future for Afghanistan or Iraq. I don't even know what we're talking about, really. Does it matter? I mean, they became one and the same. But the fighters were brought back time and time again, and then redeployed, and then now, once and for all, we hope. And the sort of intention, and then the sort of the delusion of grandeur that they had, and aimlessness, I think, in coming back now, didn't, I think, synchronize very well the amount of care that was provided for veterans, young people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the kind of political environment that they step back into, I feel, has made a lot of people with that training and familiarity with war and that attitude. I think they are at a point now where some are looking inward.
Mm-hmm.
And looking for the enemy here. So they're bringing their CTE and whatever trauma they have from this aimless adventurism right back to our neighborhoods, threatening us, threatening you, your neighbors.
I like to think that's, you know, a very small minority of people that...
Oh, I'm sure you like to think that.
I do, I believe that is the truth. I think that... most people went over there thinking they were doing the right thing.
I led with that. I absolutely mean it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are people with the best of intentions, and that there was no plan, and that we failed the people that gave so much.
Yeah, and it's not the first time.
It's absolutely history repeating.
Yeah.
We've seen this. We convince, as I said, the delusions of grandeur. Go be, represent... fight, that's strength. Well, it isn't always, and that's what we were saying. That's what I thought when so many people tried to stop
mm-hmm.
the beginning of that decade, of that era,
right.
of those peers, those generations, I think, lost. They're adrift. I mean, there's some who've survived it, they don't have as bad a CTE, or they've learn to manage some of what they experience there, but I think we are still failing them every single day. And
I don't disagree with that.
I cannot look back at that, this withdrawal and everything politically and otherwise, the
costs financially, all those tax dollars, for what?
Mm-hmm.
Relative security. Well, I find it's laughable if it wasn't so horrific.
You go back to the early 21st century, and you look at the opposition to these actions that we embarked upon, Afghanistan, Iraq. Look at what the people said, why this was wrong, what would happen. They were right. Everything they said turned out to be true. And the people who sent them over there turned out to be lying. And, you know, Donald Rumsfeld just left this realm in the last week. And I saw many, many people pointing that out, that this was a war criminal. This was somebody who sent many people overseas based on a lie. And there are so many people like that who don't really care about the individuals. They care about what they want out of it, the influence, the power. Let's not keep making that same mistake and listening to them, because they will always steer us in the wrong direction. It happens time and time again. The only thing that changes are the people who get sent over there. It's one generation to the next, and I don't want to see it happen again. Hey, you know what? I think we're filling in for Finn. We're on for about another hour or so. I think we should play some music, because we don't usually do that.
Oh, now, I know what you're doing. I know. You think that... You know, I would have done this so nicely,
uh-huh.
but you want to do it this way. You're going to make me do this, aren't you?
I don't know what option I have.
No. Go ahead with your plan. Unravel it.
I don't have a plan.
No, you want to make me look like the biggest you-know-what.
You don't need me to do that.
It just doesn't stop.
No, it never stops.
You just... Okay, all right. What do you want?
We don't have to play music.
No, I do. I really do.
It's a bad idea.
No, I'm excited. I'm putting you on...
talking nonstop.
You want me to talk. That's why you invited me as a guest.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the point?
Well, sometimes music is nice, too. And we have... Well, I was trying to get to... I was trying to actually give you credit for something. You hooked up a turntable to
our
board.
Can you say that
the
in
board,
my good ear?
The board just keeps getting bigger and bigger. We had a telephone before. Remember? Frank was on just a little while
ago. We had a thunderstorm mic.
We had a thunderstorm outdoor mic. I understand we have a coffee mic. That I don't know what that is. Just says it says coffee on the board. What does that
we'll
mean?
We'll bring up the coffee channel. I don't know. Do you have enough in your mug there?
Well, I do have a cup of coffee here, and it's not much, and it's cold. So
right.
What, if I bring the coffee mic up, will that actually...
There might be some coffee production, but let me get to this music interlude,
okay.
And then I'll see
well,
about...
I just had, you know, so there's a turntable here.
Yeah.
You hooked it up.
I did.
And I feel that maybe playing something on the turntable might be an idea that we could pursue.
Enjoyable. And something pretty appropriate, I think, for a radio station.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we're no...
I don't know about that, but... Yeah,
this is no KRP, let's be honest.
Well, no, we could never aspire to that. But, yeah, I mean... I thought maybe I could play a piece of the very first record that I ever got. Well, okay, that's not entirely true, because as a child, I had records. But they weren't record. They weren't albums, you know? They were Mr. Tubby Goes to Town. I don't know what... You know, someday I'll find those records.
Do you
want to
know what mine was?
What?
The first LP.
Your first... What was
really
your first LP?
DJ Shadow.
Really? That was your first LP?
Yeah, the Entropy LP, I think. Yeah, that was the first double that I, bought. I had bought other singles and stuff to play around with.
No, I didn't buy it. It was bought for me.
Yeah.
I couldn't just buy
walk
things.
Through snow and... you didn't have money then?
Well, you were on the West Coast. You're very self-sufficient
Wait,
out there.
There was... How did you acquire it? Did you...
I asked for it, and I received it. It was a present, either for my birthday or Christmas, or one of those things.
That's amazing.
That's how it works. So, okay, you got your first record. How old were you when you got it?
Yeah, because you didn't say CD. See, I could have said CD. I might have had a CD that I got before the vinyl, because I was interested in vinyl, but CDs were more ubiquitous.
Did you have CDs?
I know what you're saying.
Did you have CDs before you had vinyl?
I know. Yeah, but you know what? Here, this is why vinyl is important. It wasn't a special. I can't really remember my first... Okay, I know it was probably BMG. It might have been EMF, Sherbet Dip. Yeah, that was probably the first CD I got.
Wow.
It was a good album, too. And Beastie Boys' Check Your Head. That was another CD that I got. It was
okay.
Like one of my first CDs. And then, of course,
There was some Sir Mix-a-Lot in there, I think.
How old were you at the time?
Probably adolescent, like I want to say 11, 12, 13.
I'm realizing now that...
Double digits.
I was rather old when I got my first... well, the thing is, okay, the reason I was 13 when I got my first album is because we didn't have a stereo in my house. That was the first thing we had to negotiate, is to get a stereo. And by stereo, I just mean something that had two speakers and a record player. And you remember those things that you pile the records up and it would drop one record after the other after it played it?
I didn't have any of those, but I know what you're talking about. I never really understood how they worked. I think by the end they're all stacked up.
You,
so
have,
you have
to put
to,
all
like,
the records in, and then you move the little arm over, and then it somehow knows to drop one record, only one record, after it finishes playing the one before that.
And does it leave a gap for the tone arm?
Well, the tone
how
arm...
How does that work?
Okay, the tone arm moves automatically, so when it gets to the end, it picks itself up and goes back to the beginning, the next record drops, and then it moves to the beginning of the record.
So the stack remains, like, slightly higher than the tone, so the tone arm...
Of course it remains higher, yeah.
It's like a hard drive, like, reader, like, head or something.
Not at all like that, but it's basically...
No, because you get stacks of... Okay, fine, you
yeah,
know what?
It's logic. It's... Don't collide with yourself. That's the important thing. This is WUSB Stony Brook. We are filling in for Finn's Revolution on for another hour. And what we are going to try and do in this extended edition of Off the Wall is play some vinyl. Now this, okay, let me just hold this record. This means a lot to me. Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. That was my first album. That was the first album that was bought for me. And I remember this. You know,
that's your original copy, right?
That's
there,
my
right?
original copy. Somehow I have a second one, too, because I got it to replace this one, I guess. And I'm not sure how good... This is the whole point. It's not going to sound good. That's why it's special. It's hard to explain that.
Oh, yeah, I know, because it's only been played by you and been handled by you. So this is your recording.
You know, I remember, you open this up, you see the lyrics of every song. It came with a poster. It came with a couple of stickers. It was amazing what you got with a record album. And there was a sleeve, too, which is no longer in here. But looking at the actual album now, there it is, with a Prism-type record label, Harvest Records. And, yeah, I remember something happened on side one where it got really super scratched up. What I'm going to ask you to do is put this at the beginning of the fourth track. And
does it play through?
Does it play
we'll
through?
We'll find out. Okay, we'll find out.
If you can find the fourth track,
right.
that's Time. Time is the name of the song. Now, Time begins with an alarm clock. You can see the alarm clock, because on records you can see the sound. But there's also some scratching there. Now, here's what I will always remember about this this record, and every time I hear this song, there's a line in the song. It goes, "You fritter and waste the hours in an offhand way." You fritter and waste the hours in an offhand way, and the way the word "way" is said. It's like way, but that's where the skip is. So every time I hear this song, when it gets to that point, I expect to hear "you fritter and waste the hours in an offhand way, way, way," and that goes on. Now, as a kid, that annoyed me. Now I think it's amazing. As a kid, I put a nickel on top of the tone arm because I guess I was an engineer as a kid, and I thought, I'm going to try this. Because I had learned that by holding the tone arm as it went through a skip, sometimes you could guide it through the skip. By putting a nickel on there, I was adding weight and plowing through the sound so that it wouldn't skip. And that actually worked. That actually fixed it for a period at least, and it didn't skip anymore. It still made the scratchy noise, but I had apparently figured out a way to fix a skip.
All right. Well, just so you know, this has been calibrated, and right now we're putting 2 grams of weight on
okay.
the tone arm. It's at 2 grams.
Okay. Well, I don't want any special treatment.
No, this is like kind of normal. You could probably scratch with this a little bit, but it's...
No, don't.
This is for mostly listening. And
dark side of the moon, it's not meant for scratching.
This is a vintage Stanton 500 head shell and cartridge.
I'm sure that means everything to the listeners, but... So you add track number four? Let's see. I'm bringing up the turntable here. Yeah, there it is, the clock. Oh, you got that perfectly. Not bad for a 50-year-old piece of vinyl.
Oh, it's great. Is that a heartbeat?
You can hear the heartbeat.
I hear the bass, yeah.
You don't get that heartbeat nearly as pronounced on CD.
No.
I love the crackle. The crackle really makes it for me. Okay, we're going to shut up and let that lyric go through and see what happens. Skip. This is not the one I was expecting.
Now, are you trying to go forward, or you want to just let it play out? Or?
Well, I eventually want to move forward, but...
You want me to, like, try to nudge it a little?
Well, I don't want you to nudge it past the next line, because that's where the skip I remember.
I can try to do it very delicately.
That high-pitched whine before that, too, I remember that as well.
The other thing I do is raise it, nudge it a little bit, and then drop it again.
Do whatever you feel will get it to just go through this one line and make it to the next one. After that, I don't care.
This is touchy.
This is science.
All right, let me see what I can do.
All right. You went too far, Carl. You went too far. There it is! There it is! This is the most special skip I remember of my life.
We gotta sample this. I do have it. We should get the sampler set up here. And
I don't ever want to stop this.
I like it. This is a great sample.
Well, we have to work to get to this point.
But that's the skip. That's
how I described it, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's interesting. It didn't get...
Well, there was a skip before it that prevented us from getting to this one. And I'm sure we can get rid of that skip and just have it go to this skip. Okay. Wow, that's something.
Let it cook a little.
I think our listeners are already getting upset.
No, give me a little bit of that. Just like a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah, and Roger Waters lives on Long Island, and he could be getting upset if he hears this.
Well, maybe he thinks something's wrong. I don't know.
No, nothing's wrong. This is perfect.
Is the way it's supposed to be for this recording.
No, you know what amazed me about that when I was listening to this was how deep it sounded, and I don't remember it sounding that good in any other device or any other service that I listened to that song.
Well, absolutely, like, okay, CDs, you want to talk digital compression?
No, I don't. I don't want to talk about it.
Tapes, even. I mean, a little. Cassettes, not that much, but still, even though it's analog. I mean, you got MP3s, you got every media format, we go into all that. Then you got streaming services, God knows how they mangle the audio that way.
I'm sorry, I just had to do that. It drives you crazy after a while. But, yeah, it was necessary. You know, I just got some 16 RPM records because I always wanted to have one, except I don't have a record player that plays 16 RPM. And I also got some 16-inch records. You know, records are 12 inches, but there's also 16-inch records, except I don't have a turntable that will fit 16-inch records. So there's two projects now I'm involved in. 78's not a problem. I've already done that.
And are we going to talk about the wax cylinders?
About wax cylinders,
the heavy equipment when you dropped off the player. We talked about that the other week.
No, it's a console. It's a wooden console, and you can play. I haven't done it yet, and I think we should record when we do this.
That's one of the things I'll set up the Thunderstorm microphone so that, because there's no electrical aspect. It's just basically a bellows, a horn and a bellows that goes down below and then comes out the front. So we have to mic that and mess around with that, of course. This player goes to -50%.
Wait, how are you have it playing now?
Playing it with the pitch at -50.
Oh.
This is -15 or so.
That's
it's all right. I mean, this is not the greatest.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Here's an idea. If you make it go really fast, you might be able to jump it through the skip.
A little fast?
Yeah. Okay, that didn't work. Okay, that's a good skip. That's a skip that will last forever. It's never going to recover from that. Or you could put a nickel on it, and I'll bet it'll make it through. But it's—I think we've demonstrated enough.
Well, we're not playing the song, okay?
No, that's that was good though. I enjoyed that. Let me.
If you have a favorite skip on a particular record of yours, please write us otw@2600.com.
Well, it's just that people say that the reason they don't listen to vinyl is because of things like that, and for me, that's one of the prized memories. It's just the way something sounded. And, I know people with old 45s and 78s also listen for particular noises that they remember as part of their unique recording. So that was something. Do you have anything you want to play? Any vinyl?
Sure. I can cue something up just as a little bit of music, but nothing I had to picked out with such an introduction.
Like a bed, you mean?
Yeah, I have some music here, but I wasn't really prepared.
Okay, well, if you want to play it, turntable's right there, so feel free. Oh, you got something right away. What is that?
Well, these were bonus tracks. I played one as an outro last week that came with the Wave Twisters Origins album, which a lot of people got recently. It was made by a DJ troupe out of California, led by Qbert himself, who kind of has spearheaded a lot of the turntablist stuff and interesting things going on with scratching. So the whole thing is, it's like production and then some sort of DJing, like improvisation done over that production. And I think it's lovely, and a lot of people are very excited about it. So I've been playing them around the house and just exploring the sounds coming from California these days.
I have on my phone, breaking news, Eric Adams has won officially the Democratic nomination for mayor, meaning he has won the mayorship in November. And I also have severe thunderstorm watch, severe weather statement, severe thunderstorm warning, rip current statement, heat advisory. All of that came through. But if I click on it, I get an advertisement. I don't get any news, unfortunately. All right, it's coming up right now. That's the right speed?
Yeah. This is Infinite Yesterdays.
Your attention, please. We promise to satisfy your hunger, your thirst, your sweet tooth. So visit our refreshment center now. Let's go. Show starts in 3 minutes. The show.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize you weren't finished. Is he finished now, Kyle?
I'm not sure. There might be a track that goes like a little bit longer. It might even loop or something like that.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. Yeah. In fact, you can hear you're at the end of the turntable there, at the end of the record. So who is that again? I really like that.
That is DJ Qbert from the West Coast, the San Francisco area, and it's Wave Twisters. The song was... It was the Infinite Yesterdays bonus track, and the song was something about jellyfish.
Something about jellyfish. Okay, well, that's cool. That's the kind of thing I'd hear in Spiny Norman's show, I think. Well, you'll hear alternate Wednesday evenings here on WUSB. I can't help but notice that you're on the other side, way on the other side of the complex.
Yeah, but apparently you can't hear me.
Well, because you have to speak directly into the microphone.
Okay, I am.
Now you sound better, but only when you do that, and you don't have headphones, so you don't know when you don't sound good. That's
right.
The problem.
And this mic is, well, whatever. You know, this is a trial run, and it's very hard to get a good microphone these days.
Well, this is the coffee mic, apparently. So I still don't know what that means. I do hear bubbling noises. You want to explain?
Well, yeah. You caught me in the break room at our remote broadcast facility.
Right.
And So I'm just I'm helping you get through this last hour, basically.
Last 40 minutes.
40 minutes, yeah. Basically. And that requires a little bit of hot water, a little.
I know that sound.
You know the coffee stuff.
The coffee sound. Okay.
Yeah. You've heard that before.
Now it
right?
makes sense. Why we have a coffee mic? Okay, so. By bringing this up and by sending you over there, we'll be producing coffee.
Yes, a coffee-like substance, and that will get us through that 40-minute window you referred to earlier. A
coffee-like substance. Okay, well, that certainly sounds worthy. We have a PSA we have to get to. So looks like you're hard at work over there with all kinds of contraptions.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you need me to weigh in on anything, go ahead, you play one, maybe I'll check back with you.
Well,
it might get kind of noisy, though.
Okay. We like noise. It's radio. It's audible things. Is the noise going to occur now? And that's real, huh? That's an actual noise you're making.
That's how you know it's real coffee, when that noise occurs.
Do you want to explain what actually is happening with these various noises that people are hearing? You understand the whole process.
Well, I'm exaggerating with the steam. I'm not really quite ready. I thought I had a little bit more time here, and it's, you know, it's live radio. I just want you to know.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah. This is just a manual press. I got as a gift many years ago, and I've never quite perfected it. Coffee connoisseurs will tell you that these things, they're mysterious. They require all sorts of voodoo, and you have to bless the grounds and do all your traditional preparations, and that's never really perfect. You're never going to be satisfied. So I'm constantly striving to pour a better shot of espresso.
Well, it's good to have something to strive for. And the important thing is to keep reaching for the sky.
But this thing's old school. It's like, you know, people that are mechanically inclined, like myself, they would appreciate this kind of thing. So it's like an old piece of farm equipment, or like a meat grinder or something. You know, it's just, it's very involved.
It certainly appears to be. Wow, it's like a chemistry set.
So I'll be right with you, though.
Okay, well, we're going to go to a PSA, and hopefully by the time the PSA is over, a fresh cup of coffee will be closer to reality. We'll see.
I was a little bit uneasy. I didn't know much about it. Didn't know whether or not it was safe or effective, so I did a little bit of my research. I realized that it was safe, it was effective, and then the side effects were very minimum. Everyone has a choice to take the vaccine, and if you don't feel comfortable now, it's okay. One thing that is important about the vaccine is for us. African Americans who have higher rates of dying from COVID-19, the vaccine can actually save our lives. Not only save your life, but save the life of your family members. And so when people have a hesitation around taking the vaccine, again, you should consider, what are the benefits of me taking the vaccine versus the risk of me getting or having long-term effects of actually getting COVID? And once you consider that, once you've talked with your doctor, then make a decision of whether or not it's okay to do it now.
Okay, Kyle, things have gotten even more mechanical over there. I was hoping that... you know, when I go to the coffee shop and I ask for a coffee, they do it really quickly. It looks like you're building things. Listen to that.
I think you're thinking of Latte Larry's.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, we shouldn't mention brand names over the air. But while you're doing that, I'm going to go through a couple of stories here. In the last half hour or so, are you hurting yourself? It really sounds... I mean, wow. I don't work
sure
so hard.
I'm making sure you got a good cup here.
Okay. All right. Well, don't break the cup, because hitting things very hard over there.
get this. We're talking about thunderstorms and severe weather and things like that. Fox. Fox is starting a new channel for weather. How are they gonna politicize weather? I'm sure they'll figure out a way. Later this year, Rupert Murdoch is set to debut Fox Weather. I couldn't make this up. I really couldn't. Fox Weather, a 24-hour streaming channel that promises to do for seven-day forecasts what Fox has done for American politics. Really, that's a horrible thing to say. That's an awful thing to say. Not to be outdone, the Weather Channel, which is the granddaddy of television meteorology, has announced the creation of a new streaming service, Weather Channel Plus. What, do we really need this? I mean, you know, I like the weather and all, but Weather Channel Plus, what more do we need about the weather? I need the forecast. I need to know if there's severe weather headed this way. Weather Channel seems to have non-weather programming sometimes, which I don't understand. And they've taken to naming storms which shouldn't be named, which I resent. And now a streaming channel, Weather Channel Plus? What do we need this for? See, this is where we waste money. This is why we can have high-speed rail, if we just don't waste money like this. So apparently they believe Weather Channel Plus will reach 30 million subscribers by 2026. 30 million subscribers! I mean, do you know how long it took us to reach 30 million subscribers? We didn't do it in just, you know, 5 years. It took us a very long time. Amid a waning appetite for political news in the post-Trump era, media executives are realizing that demand for weather updates is ubiquitous, and for an increasing amount of the country, a matter of urgent concern. You know, in the past week alone, temperatures in the Pacific Northwest broke records, wildfires burned in Colorado, Tropical Storm Elsa strengthened into a hurricane over the Atlantic Ocean, and a thunderstorm was recorded live over a radio program just this evening. At CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News, average viewership for the first half of 2021 fell 38% from a year prior. The audience for the Weather Channel was up 7%. Kyle, have you ever watched the Weather Channel?
No, but I can see why they want to market and make money on climate disasters, creating even scripted drama and reality programming, and just trying to cash in on cataclysmic weather instead of holding the people responsible to create the conditions for such weather.
But, I mean, you can report the weather anywhere. You know, I've never felt the need to stay tuned to the Weather Channel and keep watching it. Or even get the weather from the Weather Channel, because you can't really get the weather from the Weather Channel. You might be able to read it on the bottom of the screen, but, you know, if there's something severe happening, local news, or if it's really bad national news, that's how you do it, I think.
I don't even think, like, car rental places would keep the Weather Channel on. You know, it's like, how many channels are held together basically by telemetrics of phantom viewers of basically like reception rooms in various doctor's offices?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's
although I've never been in a doctor's office that has the Weather Channel.
It's always HG.
It's always the most dumbass thing that you can't switch,
yeah,
and everybody's
home,
glued to it.
The renovation shows, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
It's, yeah. Sometimes we...
Because that's safe television.
Well, sometimes we get our hands on the remote and we switch it to Euronews or to Classic Arts Showcase or some other channel that people aren't aware of. And sometimes it lands, sometimes it doesn't, mostly it doesn't, but you got to at least try. But, you know, okay, let's look at this then. What channel do you think would be a good idea to have that they don't have now? Just off the top of your head.
Space Channel.
Space Channel. Well, I think there is something called Space Channel.
But I think that was your idea, so I kind of took your idea.
Well, no, I mean, it's not my idea. People want... What would you want in this Space Channel? What would you want to see? How's it different from NASA TV?
Good. Well,
and there's coffee here now. Wow, look at that. Just appeared.
The programming on NASA TV is good in some ways, but it's automated in a lot of other ways, and boring in many, many other ways.
It's funny in so many ways because it's like watching your AV club from high school put together videos.
So fixing a lot of that and adding a lot of like a regular space news program. I mean, I feel as passionately. No, I have. There are other TV channels, like, I don't want to say as passionately, but if we're talking new TV channels, I think also American Indigenous Television.
Oh, there you go, right
needs
there
to happen. Probably way more than space TV, and that I feel is, I will say, more, absolutely more important. We have so, and I spoke about this earlier in the show. We have so neglected what is owed, I think, and also what we have as the part of the fabric of this country that everyone is so proud of and so quick to associate with Stars and Stripes or monster trucks. But it's not the truth. The truth is we have a very rich, beautiful indigenous and tribal community in this country that gets completely neglected, and their stories don't get told. We don't have any program, very little programming in this, the I'm talking North America, U.S., for North American, U.S. tribes, and everyone else. Everyone else could benefit from their storytelling about their lives now and where they fit in to the larger represented society, in other parts of this nation. But we just ignore it. It's just, we maybe hear on Democracy Now, we hear a couple stories here and there. We've talked so many times on this show about APTN and how necessary something like that would be. So that's my number one.
APTN being Aboriginal People's Television Network in Canada.
Correct.
They now have three different channels, three feeds. And in addition to that, there's an Inuktitut channel that started up within the last year.
Yes, and there's been talks before of expanding and doing projects, and some attempts, even Vice made a couple attempts at covering stories. I think they there were like Rise Up. There were a couple shows there, but they're shows. They're productions, they're docs, documentaries, or whatever. This is a network. You need. So, yeah, Space News can wait. I think there's coverage of that.
You don't have to just do one. You can do all kinds of ideas. That's the thing with ideas.
No, but if we're going to talk about it, that's something that really is, it's embarrassing, really.
Because it is.
We should know more about our history instead of hearing it anew, like, oh, did you hear about these schools, you know, that the churches were instituting, or, you know, we hear about it in, like, little fits and spurts in the same way we're hearing about things with 1619 and Oklahoma, and, like, it should not be that it isn't a part of the curriculum, but it is.
Right.
So instead, we need a little bit more messaging.
Yeah, and people have to be interested. We have to make it so that what people learn isn't boring, isn't in any way not relevant. We have, on Long Island, just Long Island, so many villages named after Native Americans in one way or another.
It's surrounding us.
Setauket, right next to us.
It's all over. Absolutely.
Patcha, Cutcha, all sorts of names. What do those names mean? Who are those people? Are there any connections to those people?
In many ways, pronouncing those names and the remnants of those are the only interface and interaction. And I'm super familiar with it coming from the Pacific Northwest because it's the exact same thing there. Probably, I don't know, better or worse. I feel like I have a little bit richer connection to the kinds of Native communities that are around me, or at least an awareness. And even here, because of where I come from, I'm more aware of what's going on here, probably than a lot of New Yorkers.
There are so many Native Americans still around, still connected with their communities, that should have a voice. They should be able to play their music because they create all kinds of amazing music. They should be able to tell their stories because their stories are unparalleled. And we should all be able to sit back and learn from this, you know, and not dictate, learn, listen. And we don't have that opportunity.
Yeah, it's even like, there's a lot of spiritual and emphasis on like Western religions and Christianity specifically, and we speak as though it has the answers to everything, and it doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's failed everywhere around this world. It's been great for some classes of individuals, but does it really address everything that is life, everything around us? Or are questions of, like, what is success? Like, if you ask people who come up in a more egalitarian society or a society that is matrilineal, a society that puts an emphasis on the environment or aspects of spirituality and recognizes their inherent attributes in the environment or draw from it, from various natural phenomena around us, I mean, that should be some of the guidance we're counting on, instead of beating it back and ignoring it and talking as though it is a spectacle mm-hmm. at our little dinner party that is the U.S. We need to talk about how we're fixing, how we are really getting our leadership, because we're bereft. We are adrift. We are aimless in a lot of leadership realms, and I really hope, like, Biden's picks for the Interior Ministry are a new direction for specifically how tribal-native relations go on in this country, but they need to have some kind of media outlet to express the kind of difficulties and just share, because we will all benefit. We will know what these names are. We will know more about where we fit in mm-hmm. ecologically and what kinds of industrialization are the most impactful and long-term, or, you know, we'll have a better understanding of what success is domineering every bit, every acre of this country and selling it back to everyone in servitude here. I mean, is that ideal for right. humans? I don't know.
Well, I like this idea. It has to be native run, has to be native controlled. That is paramount in this whole thing. And it doesn't have to stop at just a TV network or channel. Let's have more on the radio. Let's have more native radio stations, native radio programs that we could air here at WUSB, native music that we can play.
Talk and music shows, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
I would love to hear that that kind of programming on this this fine community network and others, low power, whatever it is. But we're way overdue for hearing more in that area.
My idea, which is stupid compared to your idea.
Yeah, what,
I don't
what
even
were you
want
thinking
it. It's
of?
Dumb. I'm not even want to share it.
I said space. That was good. I mean, that's what you. No, come on. You should just come on. Just tell me. You can say it. It's not. There's no stupid ideas. You said I just am very passionate about that. I mean, if anybody's heard me, I've said as much in bits and pieces. It's I truly mean it. I think you know that it's just one thing, and I've been sitting on it for a while, but. There, I've said my piece. What do you got? Share. This is about sharing.
You promise you won't laugh?
I'm not laughing.
You're not laughing now, because I haven't said it yet. Will you laugh after
okay.
I say it?
Okay, no.
No, you won't laugh, or no, you aren't going to promise?
I answered the question.
All right.
What do you got? No, it's a good conversation.
You know, these networks like TV Land that... Actually, I haven't watched TV Land in many years, but they used to air... old TV shows. I guess they still do, but I don't know. Somehow they did it better. And then you have these weird-ass networks that are secondary channels on digital TV, like Start TV or Rewind or things like that, that show old programs from the past. But they ruin them. They ruin them by putting these modern-day bugs in the bottom right corner, or by having stupid commercials that are mail-order things for today. What I would like to have is, let's just pick a decade, 1950s. 1950s TV. It's all 1950s programming. Full screen, no bugs to interfere with the picture, full credits, no editing, exactly how it aired. And you only air commercials from that era as well. You don't air modern-day commercials, you air commercials from the 1950s. 1950s channel... would start from programs that aired January 1st, 1950, to programs that aired December 31st, 1959. All programs from all over. I mean, I'm thinking an American channel, but this could expand to other countries as well. But just things that aired on TV in that decade. News as well. News, documentaries, everything. A lot of material. But it's all 1950s. You don't like the 1950s? Well, check out the 1960s channel. Yeah. Well, color. Color starts to make its debut.
You should stop at 1964.
Why?
Because nothing good happened like before then. 65.
Nothing good happened before 1964?
It wasn't really the 60s. I mean, it was still kind of the 50s. You could.
Well, okay, I suppose. I mean, the Beatles, Ed Sullivan, that kind of would be a big thing. But yeah, sure. But you missed the whole Kennedy assassination then.
Oh, and who would want to miss that?
Well, that's a big deal. In fact, you know, you could have things air sequentially so that, you know, it's a 10-year cycle. And it's a lot of material, too, because you wouldn't be subjected to only airing NBC programming. You could air NBC, CBS, ABC, whatever.
I like this, but if you grew up in that era, you should be forbidden from watching this channel.
Why?
Because you had enough.
I just played a skit from my childhood. Why wouldn't I be allowed to watch TV from my childhood? Or someone else's childhood?
So you want me reliving whatever godforsaken decade I came from?
Look, I could say, that's why. Or you could say, aha, that proves you're a hypocrite. Yeah, I don't know. There's all sorts of things you can learn. But the point is to present these things without screwing them up, without chopping them into pieces or adding modern-day influences into them. Show them the way they aired. Show it exactly as it was, not just the programming, the commercials, the news. Get into the spirit of it. And that is a true experience. How you make money? I don't know. That's not the problem here. Make something of value. I'm sure you'll figure out how to make money, but don't mess up the programming. You know, and every decade could have something like this, going back to the 40s. I don't think there was TV in the 30s, but it'd be less programming if there was. Anyway, that's my idea. I've had that idea for a while. If I was Rupert Murdoch, instead of a Fox Weather Channel, I would start something like that.
And there would be an audience.
And if I was Ted Turner, I could start something like that.
Sure, easily.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the subscription model, it's so funny that, like, what everyone says was dying, like, 5 or 10 years ago is, like, the only way to survive now. Like, you know, okay, subscriptions, that's how you keep your little niche audience rolling. I mean, from streaming TV to movies and podcasts and I don't know, whatever other little, like, Patreons, little things where people have affinity groups they're nurturing and so forth. It's all subscriptions because they're so tiny and so small they wouldn't survive with the ad, the demands of the ad rat race and so forth, which is falling out of favor because of various other pressures and factors and of course audience behaviors. So I don't see this not being something that could be sustained in some way. I don't know if it would be a cable channel. Maybe it would be some sort of portal you enter that has a way of authenticating people that are a part of that interest group.
What I keep hearing is cable is dying because everything is dying. But cable is going to be dying at some point and replaced with something, I think, more like what you're describing here.
Well, it's so badly done. And it relies on a lot of, like, haphazard advertising.
Why does ESPN2 appear before ESPN on our cable network? Why? Why is that? Why don't all the C-SPANs appear together? Little things like that drive me crazy. Why what?
Why aren't they HD?
Yeah, why isn't everything HD? I don't know. But what I'm envisioning is you would simply select what it is that you want from a network that can provide you with all of these options. For instance, I want to see the Montana State Senate for yesterday. I want to see the session. Boom, I should be able to see that. I want to see this high school basketball game from Kansas or something like that. It's recorded. It's being aired someplace. I should be able to get that as well.
School sports are getting better coverage. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact, of course, here at Stony Brook, we do an excellent job of that at WSB itself, our sports department, but in general, there's a lot more coverage of some of those, like, playoffs and tournament games.
Well, I mean, sports is a good example.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, I want to watch La Liga from Spain. you know, or maybe some fifth division game. I should, they're all being recorded somewhere. You should be able to just make a selection and have it appear. And that, you know, that's truly customer choice, being able to do that. So I think, you know, technologically, we have the ability to do that in the very near future, if not already.
Yeah, I think the organization and implementation and systems integrating is, I think, where that magic would have to occur. And the will, like the real leadership and the sort of the will to design a kind of media viewing tool. And we saw, you know, we saw this kind of thing with, like, Google, you know, news aggregators trying, getting in early and getting no paywalls, and you were able to, like, really look at all kinds of different news from everywhere, which again gets, was short-lived and got sort of thwarted by the guarded jealousy of publications that didn't like the amount of revenue that the aggregator was getting versus their lack of subscribers, which sort of goes into the point I was making about how subscribership is like becoming this, coming back into fashion as a way to navigate all these different fragmented sources of media. But getting it all in one place, I don't know. I mean, then it's becomes this thing of who's the gatekeeper for that. We're already seeing that with that package delivery bookseller.
Well, it all comes down to greed in the end. Who's making more by providing this particular service? And, you know,
it's still locking away information. That's the end result. That's the bottom line. Is it's locked away, less people see it.
I mean, you know, you can't, you ever watch the TV show Wonder Years?
I grew up, yes, watching quite a bit of that. I think that was on ABC on Friday.
With a little help from my friends, Joe Cocker, that is the intro. But if you watch it on Netflix or wherever it shows up, you can't see it that way because they don't have the rights to the song that was part of the show. Because greed, because you have to pay for this again, and this company doesn't want to pay that company anymore. And they put you in the middle of it, and you wind up not participating, not being able to experience something as it was originally intended by the people who made it. And that's not right. That's not. How many times do you see something where you're being asked to make some kind of choice in a battle between two mega corporations, where Time Warner Cable won't carry CBS, and they ask you to contact CBS, and CBS says no, call Time Warner, and you know it's just insane.
And they do all these like crazy things tactically to make certain things not appear, and technically, you know, to blank out certain public service stuff, the other competitors trying to say it's cruel. You're thrusting your customer, not even an audience, because you don't create anything. You're just a conduit for it, but thrusting them into the position of having to sort out little licensing and copyright infighting deals and loyalties that they have really no interest in. They just want to be able to be entertained and informed.
Yeah, in the end, that's what it's really all about, is
at the lowest cost, not breaking the bank, but, you know, still having access to the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we're almost out of time, believe it or not.
Flew by.
Yeah, we're filling in for Finn. It's about 13 minutes to 9 o'clock.
That's good, because I wasn't quite ready for the butcher shop microphone.
How many microphones do we have now? This is getting kind of insane.
There's a lot of channels.
We added a lot. We added a phone. We added a turntable. We added a coffee mic. We added a thunderstorm mic.
Yep.
And
we're just trying to give people some good quality radio.
I'm losing my voice. Can you tell? I'm getting all hoarse.
I know. It's that coffee. It should have been a little stronger, huh?
Let me take a good sip of this coffee.
Get a good swig. That might help you. But it's all part of our commitment to broadcasting to our listeners and everybody out there. I hope you've settled into your evening. You had a nice bit of food, and maybe you're relaxing right now after the storm.
Yeah, the storm might not be completely over, too, so don't settle in too much.
So don't relax, because the storm is continuing, and
we don't
you may
know that.
Have
it
a
might
tree fall through your roof.
Okay, well, you don't have to get that dark. And a tree could fall through your roof any time, too. Yeah. We should update people on the groundhog situation. Last year at this time, a groundhog completely decimated our garden. We saw the same groundhog. He's back. Comes by apparently in July. He's got a kid now. Brought his kid with him and literally was showing him the garden. They were standing up on the fence that we built, looking into the garden, and his kid is next to him, about a third the size, saying, "Oh, Dad, is that where you totally destroyed those humans' dreams in 2020? As if that year wasn't bad enough for them?" And he said, "Yes, son, and you're the one that's going to go in this year because I'm too big to get through this thing." And, you know, it's cute and all that, but, my God, groundhogs, get a life. Come on, we're just trying to grow things here. It's nature. You're part of nature. We're part of nature. We're trying to do the right thing here. I'm getting attacked by ticks, you know, and all sorts of animals are, like, trying to
settle scores.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. You know, I'm doing the best I can here. So I really hope that this year we reach some kind of detente or something, because I can't take any more of the stress.
Yeah, it's true. There'll be something's got to give. There's you know, give and reciprocating and letting live and all that. So yeah, I'm holding the line. Okay,
mm-hmm.
It's the fortifications have been placed. All we can do is wait. They make the first move. That's, you know, that's on them.
Well, I've got first watch tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're on at midnight. And we'll just...
I thought it was one, but okay.
I can do one. I can do 4 hours there. Sure, I can do that. Absolutely. And then I come on again at 5 at that point. And that's right by dawn. Yeah, okay, we'll sort it out. But they're not going to get us this year. They're not going to get us. Hey, we should sign off. We're going to be back next week, I think, for our usual show, 6 to 7. Thunder. I hear thunder.
Yeah, there's more thunder.
There's more thunder coming. See, we told you the storms aren't over yet. So be careful, folks. Stay tuned to WUSB. And we will be back. And write to us, otw@2600.com.
And thanks for listening to our surprise show here.
We're going to go out with a piece from a very recent Negative Land album. Good night.
True or false? I say to you, this statement is false. Let's just think about this statement for a minute. If the statement is true, then the statement is true. And if the statement is false, then the statement is false. This statement is false. Let's just think about this statement for a minute. If the statement is true, then the statement is false. And if the statement is false, then the statement is true. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And I'd like to give you a simple example of this. If I say to you, let's just think about this statement for a minute. If the statement is false, then the statement is true. And if the statement is true, then the statement is false. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. There are always statements that can be neither proved nor disproved. This statement is true. Let's just think about this statement for a minute. If the statement is false, then the statement is true. And if the statement is true, then the statement is false. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. If the statement is true, then the statement is true. And if the statement is false, then the false statement is true. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. If I say to you, this true statement is false, let's just think about this statement for a minute. If I say to you, if the truth statement is false, then the statement is false. And if the false statement is false, then the statement is false. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. If the false statement is true, then the statement is true. Just think about this statement forever. If the true statement is false, then the statement is false. And we get into a loop which goes into a loop. If the true statement is false, then the statement is true. And if the statement is true and false, then the statement is true, true, true. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. Then this false statement is true, false. And if the true statement is false, then the statement is true, false, forever. And we get into a true loop forever. Let's just think about this statement for a minute. If the statement is true, and if the statement is false, then there's no way we can ever show that the statement is either true or false. This statement is false. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. If the statement is forever, then forever is the statement. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop.
Have you guessed everything yet?
And we get into a loop which goes on forever. And we get into a loop which goes on forever.
Conclusion?
Which goes on forever. Which goes on forever.
Whatever people want is true, even if it isn't.
May I repeat that?
Now you say, how can you make a statement that it's true even if it isn't?
Statement is false.
Who can say it isn't?
True.
Who can say what is? Who can say it isn't?
That's exactly what we
who
want.
Who can say what is?
Do it again.
Feelings are facts. So who is to say what's the fact?
Yeah.
That's exactly what we want. Do it again.
There is no reality. There's no absolute.
No.
There's no objectivism.
It's true.
There's no right and wrong.
I've got a gun.
There's no basis to criticize anybody. There's only people's arbitrary desire.
Wow. Who would be silly enough to carry an unloaded firearm?
Infinitely repeated over and over and over again. Jesus is now is to be infinitely repeated over and over and over again.
That's what he suggests.
Shut the loop off. Can you turn that loop off?
Okay.
I've got $28.
Think so. You know, you're hearing this wonderful music.
Come on, please.
Or perhaps it's very difficult for all of us.
There's gotta be someone there.
It's difficult to understand that that other people don't process information that we seem to have. It's very difficult for all of us because we all have brains and they seem to be the same.
Efficiency equals death.
Think so. Perhaps you eliminate everything except the one answer.
The experiment requires that you continue.
Well, it could be this, but either this or that.
Ed, I've got news for you. No brain. What?
When you allow yourself to be confused.
No brain.
When you're kind of confused about something.
No brain.
All of us can't imagine it.
What?
All of us. If all of us are none of us. Well, kind of what would happen if you allow yourself to be confused.
No brain.
Well, I wonder what would happen if we can't.
Which is easiest to do? Ask discover the fish or discover the riddle. Take a minute to think about it, and then guess.
Go away! Tolerate uncertainty. Tolerating uncertainty. Tolerating uncertainty. Can uncertainty be tolerated?
Enormous amount of hostility in you that would explain perhaps why you may be alone right now.
That's what he's suggesting.
It's very difficult for people to relate to you.
It's very difficult for all of you
to have a very set pattern of ideas.
Efficiency resilience requires just diversity.
And you're very self-righteous.
Efficiency equals diversity just.
And I find those qualities very difficult to relate to.
For all of us.
Normal. These metaphors are physical. Physically realized in the neural circuitry of your brain over and over is a reason why we think in this way.
We all are in this cultural trance. We all are in this cultural trance. All of us. All of us. As a people. It's very difficult for all of us. Perhaps